It's time for Mac Break Weekly, their first Mac Break of the year. And I've got something very special, an unboxing coming up. I'll give you a hint. It looks a little like this. Next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 591, recorded Tuesday, January 2nd, 2018. Mac in Black. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple, first show of 2018. And, boy, there's news from Apple. While we were on vacation, a lot of stuff happened. A lot of stuff broke. Rene Ritchie's here from Montreal, his last day in his old apartment, imore.com. Hello, Rene.
I didn't get a vacation, Leo. I was on this island. I was by myself, and they hunted me down, and they extended an iPhone towards me that had issues. And I just had to decide in that moment if I was going to pick it up and resume my life.
Did that make you crazy? Like, you had to cover the battery story and, like, the whole
I always learn a lot. I learn a lot from this.
I know, and I'm counting on you to explain it all for us. So we're glad. Because
no pressure.
I have some. I'm curious.
For 800 years, iPhones have I used, Leo. My own explanation.
Also with us, Alex Lindsay for the Pixel Core in studio.
Hello.
Nice to see you. Did you have a happy holiday?
I did have a happy holiday.
You did not have to write up 100,000 words on Apple battery problems.
You know, I did not. I did not have to write about it. I barely even paid attention.
Me too. That's why we're glad Renee's here. Explain it all for us. Andy Yannacco is also here from the Chicago Sun-Times in the coldest place in the world.
Oh, good heavens, yes.
Do people from Montreal laugh when people in Boston say, oh, it's down below?
Everyone's pain is legitimate, Leo.
Yeah,
everyone's
you're right.
Pain is legitimate.
Right.
Yeah. Such a politically correct thing to say.
I was in the Caribbean, and it was 82 degrees, and then it rained for like 5 minutes, and I was so upset.
Andy, so, Andy, I had a polar vortex.
Yeah, you're getting the cold. It's the coldest winter in New England in years.
It's definitely the longest. It's the sort of day where the daily newspaper always has, here's what the record was, here's what it might be today. So, yeah. it's not as bad as we're all being reminded of 2 years ago, where we got this like a month of snow and then 2 or 3 weeks of like sub-freezing temperatures. So none of the snow was melting or going anywhere. So the snow was piles just getting higher and higher and higher, and we're just tunneling through things. Yes.
Well, something happened while I was gone. I was kind of surprised. A guy in a white beard and a red suit dropped something off while I was gone. In fact, let me show you, because maybe you can tell me. Yeah, something happened. And it barely fit under the Christmas tree. Here, I'll turn my microphone so you can hear
Alex,
me.
Alex, just
shouting.
Shove that surface off his desk. Just shove that surface right off his desk. Make him some room.
This thing is huge. What is this? Oh! I blame
talk about,
Rene Ritchie.
Talk about generating heat.
By the way, I love the wedge-shaped box. That's the first giveaway, isn't it?
Yep. It's a Tauntaun.
So I guess we should open this.
I think so.
Have you bought one yet, Alex?
I have not. I'm waiting to see how yours works.
Rene, you got one, right?
I was so close to buying one in the store, but the ones in the store do not come with the trackpads, and I don't cotton to Apple mouses, so I delayed my purchase.
Well, I blame you for this, Rene. You talked me into it on our last Mac Break Weekly.
I'll take it. Look, it's gorgeous. It's space gray. That's all you need to know.
It's gray.
It's the box.
It's gray.
So beautiful.
This is the iMac Pro, for those of you listening at home. And it came on December... it was supposed to come December 28th. It came the day after Christmas.
26th. Oh.
The 26th.
Boxing Day.
It came a little sooner.
It was really Unboxing Day.
So this is, I wasn't here. I was in the Caribbean. I got a notice on my phone, your iMac Pro has arrived. Enjoy. And I went, oh.
None of the heavy fingered Twit folks opened it for you?
Well, you know what? I've been home for 3 days, and it took great fortitude not to rush into the office and open this.
Because
I
knew.
Figure out how to open the keyboard.
Yeah. And, of course, the box is too pretty to put shipping labels on it, so they have to ship it inside another custom-made
box
just to protect
that, though,
the box art.
Yes. The world that
well, if the box came damaged, people would sue, Andy.
Oh, look,
Look at that.
It's a major award.
So the front just kind of lies down. Ah, there's the steel gray.
The keyboard's steel gray too.
It's pretty. Yeah, everything's steel gray, right?
Even the monitor, the screen cover is steel gray.
There must be a mouse in there
look
too.
Look at that, yeah. And it's got the full keyboard.
It's almost a black keyboard. It's a beautiful keyboard.
This makes sure that you can properly look down on all your friends because you have
pro.
Remember, there mustn't be any color or any joy expressed in the product.
So Renee convinced
nothing but
me
leakness.
Guilty.
He said the sweet spot is the 10.
Sorry, not sorry, Leo.
10 core, 64 gig RAM, right? Ooh, look at
that has the highest frequency.
That is, you still have to charge it on the bottom.
Yeah.
But it is a beautiful mouse, a black mouse. And, you know, even what's nice, even the paper that they cover the screen in.
And the stickers. Wait till you see the stickers, Leo.
There's stickers?
Look at this.
Yeah.
It comes with a charging cable, a black lightning. By the way, you could always get lightning charging cables in black from other companies. It's the first time Apple's ever made a black lightning charging
cable. Apple invents black.
And here come the stickers, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I got black stickers with my Mac trash can. Are there stickers?
Hold on.
Alex, the best part in here. This is what you pay 10 grand for.
Excuse me, there was no stickers at all. I don't know what happened to them.
Oh, but I already have black stickers.
Yeah, but now you got four black stickers.
You can have those.
Yeah, that's four more than the rest of us.
I now have four black stickers. All right. Let's take this off. You could just slip this off here.
Push that surface. Make some space for it.
Woo! Purdy. Sorry to block you, Renee, but the thing is so damn big.
Please. It's so much better looking than I am.
You know, what would have been really cool is if this little cleaning thing was Vanta Black.
Oh.
That would have been.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Of course,
about.
It would have been worse.
Star Wars reference.
No, it's like that pure, that super black black that is. That
absence of all light.
Of course, it would cost as much as the computer, but it would have been worth it.
And we're removing the screen protection. That means we own it now, right?
Especially when you rip it in the middle.
Oh, we ripped in the middle. How am I going to put that back in the box?
Just be careful when you put it in your pocket without that screen protector.
So the funny thing is, aside from the color, you're not going to notice anything different about this, right? I mean,
it's exactly to the millimeter the same casing as the current iMac.
Oh, but it looks so cool.
The fan vent on the back, Leo. That's the giveaway.
Boy, I have to say, this is the way it was with the first iMac. It's nice to not have a lot of wires. You know,
and Karsten just put me in that iMac for the show.
It's got one wire coming out the back. Of course, there's another wire to charge your. Here, let me show you the backside. It's pretty too. Oh, they even put a sticker on the Apple.
You don't want to scratch the Apple.
Oh, that's a shiny Apple. $8,000 as configured.
Ooh.
That's again the 10 core. I can't remember how big a hard drive, but you all told me not to get a giant hard drive.
Yes.
Because it's one. That was the only choice, I guess.
The fiber cloth that comes with it is quite nice.
Lindsay approved.
Lindsay approved.
I have a lot of fiber cloths. And I just tested it on my glasses. It worked quite well.
Where'd the keyboard? Oh, the keyboard's all of this is wireless, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. So I don't need anything.
Use the lightning cable to pair it, but then after that it's wireless.
Oh, you do use the lightning cable. That's why they put a lightning cable on the box.
It charges it and it pairs. It does that instant pairing thing.
Yeah. So to start it up, I should put the lightning cable in the keyboard?
Yeah.
So I see 1, 2, 3, 4 type A USB ports and 1, 2, 3, 4 type C USB ports. That's nice.
Multiple ports on a pro machine.
Wow. 10 gigabit Ethernet, right? That's nice. Yeah. And an SD card reading slot.
Yeah.
What? I thought SD cards were deprecated.
Don't complain about the position or they'll take it away. Just be very careful right now.
You know, though, I'm going to forget that I have that.
Well, because maybe you don't want to spin the screen around every time you want.
I know that's
the
there.
So
well, you fumble it, you feel it.
I have a little reader that's stuck to my foot.
All right, the on-off switch is as always on my Mac.
Is that just a close?
I thought Phil said because pro photographers use compact flash cards because they can't make everybody happy. They decided the smartest thing to do was to take away the SD card.
Make everybody miserable.
Yeah. If you can't make it, but now my camera, all but my 5D, and 5D even has an SD card. All but my five, or is
even
it
our camera, even our Blackmagic video cameras or
have
SD cards.
Yeah. And my Sony A9 is SD, so that's fine.
Mm. I think it's great.
Your Olympus is an SD.
And this is
card.
a 10 gig Ethernet.
My Olympus is SD. My audio, everything is SD.
Yeah, so I don't mind an SD reader.
I don't want to say that Phil was saying something silly because he's the head of marketing.
Maybe. You know, I think the people will just get
Phil's
real.
A Leica guy.
I think people will just get really good.
My Leica uses an SD card. We don't have enough room for everybody. Go ahead, power, John. You do the honors. Press that on-off switch there. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to boot up. Does it make a special bong? Does it make anything? Is it
plugged in? Oh, you can make a special bong out of anything. You're Northern California, man.
That's right. Pot is now legal today, as of yesterday, in recreational marijuana.
This tea has gotten a lot better, I can tell you that for nothing.
like Renee. Renee's peeking over the top. Kilroy was here. All right, well, it's dead on arrival. Thank you very much, everybody. That's the iMac Pro.
Bum, bum, bum,
oh, there it goes.
Just had to think for a little while.
There, I was thinking. Oh, there's a lot of RAM. Was that a big, long RAM test? Is that what I can expect from now on, Renee?
Well, I mean, do you reboot them a lot, Leo?
Never.
Yeah.
People have been saying, oh, good, can I have the Surface Studio? I'm not giving up the Surface Studio. If this iMac was a touchscreen and lay flat, I would. But it doesn't do either
Why
of
Why don't you
things.
Make turn the Surface Studio into a giant Wacom tablet for your iMac?
I might do that. No, this thing is, I think I'm going to take this home. I don't think I'm even going to leave it here. There's really no reason for this to exist. not in my life anyway, but I'm, you know.
It's going to be your new home media service. Well,
it needs to connect to
the mouse. It wants the mouse first.
Mouse.
The hell?
Okay. So unplug that keyboard.
That is going to turn it on.
Oh, that is an extremely cryptic.
The mouse is off.
It's off?
Is it on?
Turn it on. Okay. It should have enough juice, right? So the keyboard's connected. And now the mouse is on. There we go. Bam. Now it's working. Next. I won't be using either this keyboard Language. Or the mouse for any length of time.
I was going to say, I think the magic mouse that comes with this new iMac, it's going to be the most gorgeous mouse in anybody's drawer ever.
Yes.
What does that say? I can't read it.
Bluetooth, to pair the Bluetooth keyboard, turn it on and wait for your computer to connect to it.
It's not on.
It's not on.
Dummy. Dummy.
I can't remember to turn mine off. I always just leave it on.
Well, it goes to sleep.
What's the little slot on the keyboard that's up at the top? Is there a no, up on the front part? Is that a slot?
Yeah. It looks like a, it's something.
I know.
What do you think that is? It's got rubber in it. Don't know.
Mine has that too. I don't know what that's for either.
It's aesthetics. Oh. Okay, it now sees a keyboard. You have that too. You have the little.
That's on the regular old, like the mortal, the silver version that us mortals have.
Didn't it already ask what language? All right, it's still asking. Oh, it's
thinking.
What? But I'm a trackpad user, like all good-hearted people.
All right. I don't know if I'll go through this whole setup. It's too bright. Can you iris down a little bit so that we can see it? And B, it looks just like setting up any other Mac. It's just dark, right?
It should show you all the cores firing at once so people know you're setting up.
Oh, I'd love to see that. Wouldn't you love to see that?
You could use...
there is software, you know, multi-monitor or whatever. iStat monitor.
iStat.
Yeah.
Mark,
I feel completely blind if I don't have iStat running.
Really?
Yeah, like I have it on every computer. Like if
just one to of know our, if it's well, you because you're doing
because
a lot
you're
of
how much your bandwidth transcoding and yeah. You know.
All right,
but it tells me like am I rendering or something? I can look over and just see
I
the
probably
little.
I have a license for that somewhere lying around.
I've got a license for six of them, like the family pack.
No, it's good to have like an external bank of lights, like in an old ENIAC. There's some madman created a fully functional 6502 CPU using like full size transistors. It's about like a meter on a side. And one of the coolest things about it is that he decided, what the hell, let's put like an LED at every single register. So when it's running, it's just a flurry of lights as you see numbers actually moving through this CPU. And I don't think I'd like to have a computer about the size of a parking space, but I think I would like to have a computer with more lights.
This is the one that I probably shouldn't go through, but this is the one where I always get mad because I use a different Apple ID for iTunes and for my iCloud.
You can do that?
Yeah. Oh. Right here at the bottom in the fine print, use different IDs for both.
Yeah, I'll do that.
I don't know. I can't remember why I do that, but there's a good reason, right, Renee?
No.
Well, you don't want anyone shoulder surfing your iCloud ID when you're typing it in to log in. In the office, it's not a big deal, but when you have your laptop out with you at coffee shops and stuff, you could have someone, you know, just waiting to peep at what you're typing in.
Now, why can't I just take my old iMac and put it back to back with this iMac and have them?
You can cable it. I think that you can still do the.
Can you really?
Yeah, you can put a cable in between them and do the setup assistant.
What I thought was crazy was we were at an event, and the producer that was sitting next to me was trying to get on the Wi-Fi, and it asked if I wanted to share the Wi-Fi password for the
iOS
space
11
with somebody next to me. Yep. But it happened randomly, and I was like, yes, and he just, boom, he was on.
Wow.
And it wasn't even between two of my own phones. It was like with somebody else with an iPhone. And I couldn't, but now I can't figure out when it turns on and when it doesn't turn on. Like, I've never seen it again. Like, it was like this magic moment of happiness, and then it was gone.
It'll request it. Like, there's two. If you have a guest network, it'll let you share a guest password. If you have a normal Wi-Fi network and someone else is trying to get on it, and all your iPhones are up to date, they'll sort of do this Bluetooth handshake and let you pass them the password without telling it to them. So they don't have to actually know what your password is. You can just prove them for the network.
That was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah.
So now it's, what do people do who don't have other Apple stuff when it says
sign into us, Leo?
You just try to be nice.
They say sign into iCloud, and then you look at your phone and you get the digits. But what do what do the little people do? If this is their only Mac.
Well, the funny thing is that when that happens for me, I've got these iPads and iPhones. Everything goes all over the house. It just goes ding, 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 ding.
They probably don't have a two-factor Apple account if they're not already Apple users.
Oh, I turned on two-factor. That's why.
Yeah. You can have convenience or you can have security.
Yeah.
I was getting my watch to run my Apple TV.
I'm logging in. That's why
and
I'm silent.
I got into this confusing mix of different codes. Like there was a pairing four-digit code, and then there was the six-digit code, and I had to figure out which one had to come first, and it was very complicated.
That's super annoying.
But now my watch can run my...
Why is it now sending me a text message? That's a separate one?
See, this is exactly what I dealt with.
It should only give you a pop-up that shows, like, the map is telling you where it's coming
from. Yeah, I got that, and now I have another one that's just sending a text message to my phone for a four-digit. I've done something wrong. Oh, that's for the iTunes, maybe, that different account?
Maybe, but if that would still be on the old, I don't know. We should check into that.
There's a lot of things with Apple where the answer is, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
But it used to be like that. It used to be yes or no. It was like just a clear answer. You cannot do that, sir. And then you were done. But now it's like, maybe.
I got to say, it's still the short travel keyboard. I'm not as... But I have a real keyboard at home that's not a... Yeah.
You can get a Logitech MX mouse, and you can get...
You know what I have is that DOS keyboard that Andy recommended. Now he doesn't use them anymore with the cherry brown keys. They're nice.
And that's the comic book characters.
Yeah. No, Andy, I took those off.
Andy, you moved on to another keyboard?
Actually, I recommended the DOS keyboard a few years ago. When I bought a new one last year, I liked the DOS, but I got a 110 keyboard, I think.
You got the WASD coder's keyboard, didn't you?
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that. I have that everywhere.
Because it's a little bit more compact, and I just liked it.
I have that.
I kind of want a big one that just requires hammers.
Yes. VR. You can do that. AR. Do that in AR, kit, Alex.
So you want sort of a Blue Man Group sort of keyboard?
Yeah, exactly. That would be awesome.
You've just got paddles.
Especially if it had a little injector that constantly had paint.
It's so thin, you can almost see
paint going everywhere.
That's good. So I'm just it's done. I've logged in all the logins, and I guess it's just going to keep going. Is there anything I could put on there that would...
Photo scan. I'll give you some photos.
Photo scan?
Yeah, that's it takes a lot of CPU power. That's the one I told you like renders for like 6 days in a row.
Oh, the one you showed us.
Mm-hmm.
So we could see it go... or not.
If it did it really fast, I might... I probably have to buy one of these like next week if it...
Any reason I shouldn't do express setup, Renee?
No, I mean, unless you're really fussy about everything.
That's for Siri and location and then sending information back to Apple and all that stuff. No, I want... This is, you know, it's not Microsoft for crying out loud.
We wouldn't know what to do with it if you gave it to us.
This is the part. Okay, this is the part. Everybody, when you're installing your new Mac, don't just say okay to this. I hate this.
Yes, don't do that.
Store files from documents and desktop in iCloud Drive?
No.
And that's defaulted by default checked. And that drives me nuts.
Yeah, that's not a good... Saying documents, because I don't keep anything in my documents folder.
Well, the cynic would say this is Apple's attempt to get you to buy more iCloud storage, because if you store everything that's in your documents folder up there, you're going to use it up.
It's really their regret for not having bought Dropbox when it was a feature, not a product.
Yeah.
And now still suffering the consequences of that.
So, interestingly, by default, File Vault is turned on. The check marked both those boxes, which are turn on File Vault disk encryption and allow my iCloud account to unlock my disk. That's so if you forget your password, you can still use your iCloud account.
And actually, it's got that T2 chip, so it's all done in hardware acceleration, so you shouldn't have any...
So you do that. Is that the default in all Macs now, to File Vault?
I don't think so. I think that...
I've never seen that before. I've never seen that interface before.
Yeah. I always turn it on, but now it's saying, by default, use File Vault. That's good. Oh, sorry. Now everybody sees my File Vault recovery key, so much for my File Vault.
Only on that machine. You can change it later. Let's do that.
Can I change it later?
You should be able to. Like, if you,
what if
you
I back it, out of it? Let me back out of it. Now, don't look. Is it the same or is it going to give me a new one? It didn't even give me one at all this time. So now folks at home that saw my unencryption passkey, could you send me an email with that? That's the recovery key, but I don't need to because I checked the box that says recover from iCloud. There you go. There's the High Sierra desktop. I have to say, 5K is gorgeous.
E3.
And is this different from the current 5K iMac?
No, it's the same. It's the same screen, 10-bit. It's got the 10-bit dithering on the P3 display, so you get simulated billions of colors, which is really nice.
So let me go to about this Mac anyway. Just
zoom back to get that whole screen in.
So
Renee, if you play HDR, do you get an HDR experience? Not really.
You get HDR-ish because the entire pipeline is HDR, but you're still limited by the LCD technology onto how much contrast ratio it can give you. But it'll do 10-bit. So this one is different because it's Skylake. So it does 8-bit HEVC decoding, but it'll use the GPU to do those two final bits. So it will give you full HDR pipeline.
Right.
It's just fusing them.
I'll just read this off. 3 gigahertz Intel Xeon W. Whatever the hell that is. iMac Pro 2017. Memory 64 gigs, 2666 megahertz DDR4. Startup disk Macintosh HD. Graphics Radeon Pro Vega 6416. Did I get the wrong video card? I can't even...
No. You got the good one.
I got the good one. And then storage, 1 terabyte. There you go. There you have it. Built-in Retina display. So there you go.
And look, space gray icon.
Oh, look. Yeah, it matches. Yep. Yep.
Darn right it does.
4 16 gig SIMs. All four slots are occupied.
Yeah, they always occupy. They say they always occupy the slots no matter what configuration because it gives them better parity.
You want to have balanced anyway, right? 2 and 2.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess you could do 32 with 32. Memory upgrade instructions. Don't bring it to Apple.
Yep.
That's the instruction. There you go. Support, and I won't go to the service because I'll show, I don't know what it'll show. Well, there you go. That is a brand new iMac Pro, and man, it sure feels fast.
Yep. that mouse goes incredibly fast.
That screen is so pretty.
It is very pretty, actually. It's a beautiful screen. And I like having the gray kind of makes the whole computer fade away.
And as we all know from Pro apps, making a darker color means it's more expensive. You can charge more as long as it's dark.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll have a full review on Saturday on the new screensavers. That'll give me some time to benchmark it. Is the Blackmagic's disk test still the way to do it?
Well, that's to do disk test. And then what you want to do is you want to use... I mean, a lot of people have already run like Cinebench on it, but you can run Cinebench. That's Maxon's
that's just for testing. For processor speed.
But I could send you some photos.
And I'll do the rendering.
And then do PhotoScan.
Let's do it.
Because PhotoScan's pretty... It uses both the GPU and the CPU. And if you tell me how long it takes for it to do, I'll send you something
that's
simple that won't take like days.
That's a great idea.
Okay, so I'll work on that.
Yeah, that'd be very helpful. Thank you, Alex.
And then I'll do it on my laptop and on my iMac because I have the newest iMac as well at home. It's pretty decked out.
Yeah. So compare it to that.
So we can compare that one and see like what the speeds were like.
And then, of course, what I always do with a new Mac is I go to the App Store, see if there's any updates. Would there be? Maybe? I don't know. Let's see. And then download all the purchased apps that already... That's one of the things that's nice about the App Store. Doesn't that save you a lot of time?
Every time I install something that's not on the Mac Store, I go, oh, this is going to be a pain later. I'm going to pay for this.
Well, I'm just so glad they're updating iTunes to 12.7.2. Are you putting Ethernet in there, John? You know, you probably should. We have 10 gigabit Ethernet. Is there any way I can get 10 gigabit to the...
Yes.
I'd have to go back to the server room, probably.
It's got a camera on Leo right now. He can do that.
We have 10 gigabit fiber in here. I mean, it'd be kind of interesting.
Leo's taking all the bandwidth for Twitch.
I'm going to install Numbers, iMovie, Keynote, Pages.
Final Cut, if you've got it.
GarageBand. I do own FiberCut. Yep.
Do your 360 video in VR, Leo.
So, yeah, it looks nice.
And then during the show, Alex can build us VR apps.
Yeah, it looks nice.
There you go.
Bum.
I just hate to imagine how much this new Mac is going to contribute to global warming just with everybody trying to find the most CPU-intensive stuff they don't need to run.
Bitcoin,
just
right?
To see
how
I should do some Bitcoin mining on it just for fun.
I feel warmer already.
Yeah. I have Ethernet and I have video out. Nice. Thank you, John. You're very good. John's the best. So should I turn off Wi-Fi and just... I'm just curious what happens if I go to fast.com. Let's just... This is Netflix bandwidth test going. Oh, I've never seen it that fast. That's
really? Your, it did 1.3? I've never seen it over 1.0.
Here, because of the overhead of the machines, we usually get 900
right.
something.
Right, 969 so, has been the highest.
That's a good sign. Let me compare it. Let's go to speed test, see what we get. Why not? So we're hardwired now. Via our Sonic 10 gigabit fiber.
Interesting.
Connection.
Well, that could be your connection to Sonic.
Yeah, it's
or
funny.
Fast metrics, I mean.
These speed tests rarely does as well as a fast.
You have to connect. You have to find. Well, it's because you have to find a server
that's peered to Sonic. Yeah.
Right.
So upload's better than download right now.
So that's fast. I bet you download. That's fast metrics. That's having that can't go any faster.
Yeah, we're pegging fast metrics. Yeah. Should I...
you can find another server.
Find one that's better for Sonic. Anyway, there you go.
It's okay for these
it's
kinds
all right.
of things.
It's okay.
You know.
So what I was thinking of doing, I only have a scant terabyte internal drive. I have...
A modicum storage.
A modicum of storage.
I always think of that when we say this kind of thing. 1993, I bought a 122 meg drive.
I know.
And someone asked, what are we going to do with it? What are you going to do with all that memory? And I was like, audio.
I could beat you.
I could do audio.
In 84. 5 or 86, I bought a 5 megabyte drive. Very hideously expensive, but I needed it because I had to build my White Smith C compiler by hand. You had to bootstrap it up, and I had to have all that storage for all the libraries.
I know.
All right. I do have a one third party Thunderbolt 3 drive enclosure, external drive enclosure. I could try mm-hmm. with the Akitio. So I could plug that into the back of it, benchmark that as external. But the problem is it's only to Samsung Evos, not even the Evo Pros.
You can benchmark it to see what the internal drive's doing.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. I'll download right now. I'll get the Blackmagic. We can at least see that. All right. That's enough of that.
Enough of that.
I'm not gloating. I didn't really want to buy it, but I had to because Renee had one.
It was your duty.
It's my duty. My duty to God and country.
There's some breaking news, Leo.
Yes.
BuddyBuild, which is a Vancouver-based dev tools company, has just joined Apple's Xcode team as of like 3
wow.
minutes ago.
That's good news.
Yeah, so they're probably going to integrate with TestFlight.
So BuddyBuild was a...
BuddyBuild.com. Yeah, it was
it's one of those deployment solutions, I understand. Yeah, yeah. Kind of like... what is it I use on Linux? So it
we'll
does
what happens with their Android app, but the rest of it should be
yeah,
fine. Okay.
Yeah, interesting. Works with
it's
GitHub.
Because Hockey went to Tesla went to Apple. Hockey went to Microsoft. Fun
all
times.
Right. Shall we try a little Black Magic? That old Black Magic got me in its spell. That old Black Magic that I know so well. So while we're running this test, which probably won't take that long. What do you recommend, Alex, when we do this? How big a size file? Big or little?
Usually big is going to give you the overall view.
Five gigabytes.
Yeah, it tells you different things. So, but 5 gigs is going to be easier to measure.
Okay. And this is from Blackmagic. And the reason they do this is actually shown in the graph, the grid below. It shows you what kind of video you can reasonably stream to the hard drive from. So speed test. I would expect it to do that.
Whoa. Right?
So it basically says you can do everything.
It pegged. It pegged
everything
it.
Everything you want.
It pegged it.
Anything you'd like to do with this computer.
The reads are a little slower, but we're getting 3 gigs.
What the?
Three gigabytes a second read and 2.5 gigabytes a second. I'm sorry, right?
Continued
3 gigabytes
on
when
a half
read. When we did the Road to 1080p, when we did the, you know, the original MacBook, we built RAIDs. Like really fast RAIDs so that we could get up to, we needed 220 megs a second to make that work. And there was, it was six really expensive drives. And eventually we got the Xservs and everything else just to be able to get to 200. I just want to point out.
There's a green checks in every box on there.
That's amazing.
I'm probably thrashing the drives. I'm going to stop this now.
I really want one now.
Let's do a screen.
But it's so cool. You just want to do it.
It is pretty cool. Let's do a screenshot real quick.
You're like a new Mustang owner who chews up the tires like on day three. You just got to make it to a burnout.
Just got to do a couple of donuts and then I'll be done. So that's pretty good.
That is amazing.
Is it?
Yeah.
Better than...
I've never seen that number, those two numbers.
Right? I didn't know the dials before. Went that high. When I
like that. I love it that it pegged the right dial immediately. I feel like it can't go... It's like the problem is not the hard drive. The problem is the software can't go
well,
any higher.
That's the scale of the
And yet it sucks there's not an actual physical hard drive you can go in and replace, but it's so cool when you put those chips right on the board.
Are they using M.2 NVMe on this?
I don't know.
I think they are probably, right?
I believe so. It's all PCIe. Server grade everything.
Yeah.
Wow. I need one. That's all I can say. Oh, man.
I think Alex is going to have to excuse himself.
I'm having a hard time talking.
So just to give you the final results, 3,035.5 megabytes per second. Right. 2,491.2 megabytes per second read. And that's typical of SSD. Read is a little slower than write.
Yep.
No. Isn't that the other way around?
No. Usually the other way.
Read
write
should
is
be faster.
Slower.
Why is write so fast?
I don't know.
The hell?
I think because it doesn't care. It doesn't have to go look for anything. It just splats it onto the drive.
Holy smoly.
Not always. Seeking. It's just.
So basically, I'm going to take this home and that's what I'm going to do all day.
Yes.
Got nothing else.
Leo, come to dinner. I can't, Lisa. I'm transcoding again.
I'm doing it. This speed test.
That's you buy a chainsaw. The first thing you do is cut down that tree branch that fell down the storm. Then you spend the rest of the days playing. I wonder if it'll cut this.
Yeah.
Then you need a new sofa.
All right, let's talk about batteries because that was the story that kept poor Renee Ritchie working through the holiday break. I'm sorry. This story broke. Like Christmas Eve? When did it break?
Yeah, it was. Well, I mean, it never really broke. That was the thing. Like, Apple did this almost a year ago, and then there was a Reddit thread about a guy who replaced his battery and got some attention, and then John Poole from Geekbench ran his benchmarks, and it slowly started gaining ground. It was like a snowball just going downhill towards Christmas.
Yeah. So, but as usual, Reddit is, you know, where you find this stuff. This one, 24 days ago, PSA, iPhone slow, try replacing your battery. And so this one has been updated since the original post. Apple at first didn't say anything. There was just all of this information. And then Apple finally said, yeah, they copped to it. Yeah. And they explained why. So I'm going to, rather than paraphrase Apple, I'm going to let you paraphrase Apple. What did Apple, they said... We slow it down, yeah. Why?
Yeah, so, all right, so what happened was about a year ago, there was this issue where iPhone 6 and some iPhone 6S were draining fast and shutting down, or just shutting down even when they had charge. And it was a bit of a brouhaha, and Apple eventually made a comment saying that there was a percentage of people who are having this issue, and they were going to make changes to try to prevent it. And it was a bad issue back then because you couldn't even restart the iPhones unless you went and physically plugged them in. They were just off. And so Apple did two things. One, they made it so that the iPhones could reboot without being connected to external power, so they would come back on. And they made a change in iOS 10.3.2. Before that, they actually did an earlier version of iOS that ran a bunch of diagnostics and tried to figure out what was going wrong, got the information, and then used that to make the update. And what they ended up doing was adding battery health, power management to the throttling mechanism in iOS. And all CPUs are almost always throttled, typically for heat, because if they get too hot, it's incredibly damaging. So the processor will start really fast and then ramp down as the heat builds up inside a device. And iPhones are tiny, tiny little devices. But what this was doing was making sure that as the battery health deteriorated, especially if it was deteriorating quickly due to exposure to heat or exposure to cold or massive amounts of charge cycles, anything like that, it was no longer causing those power spikes, which were causing the device to shut down. So everything sounded fine back then. Apple pushed out the update. Everyone sort of went on with their lives. And then as the devices got a little bit older and the batteries aged a little more, people started seeing profound performance degradation in some of these devices, maybe like by 25% or 33%. And when you're dealing with an iPhone, that's quite a bit, especially because Apple is famous for single-thread performance. It's what makes the interface feel so snappy. And it was not intuitive why it was happening, because if your phone drains or it shuts off, you might suspect the battery and you might take it in and get the battery serviced. But if your phone is slow, you don't suspect the battery at all. So people weren't really – they didn't understand what the problem was. So this Thread came out and the guy changed the battery and suddenly everything was great. And John Poolsot, who runs Geekbench, and his wife's iPhone was slow, and he started running all these benchmarks. And it showed that how much certain iPhone models over time were downgrading or throttling the performance in order to maintain – the battery life and prevent the shutdowns. And it wasn't all of them. I think the figures that we're seeing is like 33% of them. But that is, when you're talking about iPhone owners, that is a huge number of devices. So that became big news. And then Apple started, you know, to start putting out statements. Yes, we're doing this, what they called advanced power management, which is throttling on the CPU. And then Leo, it snowballed further.
Well, and part of the problem is that there's always, everyone keeps on saying that Apple's slowing down their phones. So there's a conspiracy theory that's been kind of that this is...
It fits very well what people have been saying for a while, which is Apple wants you to buy a new phone, so when you get iOS 11, your older phone's not going to work as well. And that's just to prod you into getting a new phone. That's not for any technical reason. Now, let's give people a TLDR, because CR1 somebody in the chat room said, I had to explain this to every single family member the whole holiday season. So let me try this, Renee, and see if this represents it fairly. Because batteries in phones age.
All batteries age.
All batteries.
Yes.
And at some point, they won't be able to do the things they used to do. Apple, when in the operating system, checks the battery. If it's an older battery, it will keep keep programs from doing things that are really taxing to the battery. The choice would be the battery will shut down if it doesn't do this, and that means the phone will shut. So Apple prefers you have a slower phone, as you would probably, a slower phone with an old battery
that still
than
makes
a phone
calls.
That crashes all the time.
Or that still makes phone calls.
And this I learned today, Apple's software checks the battery, and if you put a new battery in,
it immediately gets better.
It immediately will speed up. So it's not that the phone is old, it's that the battery is old.
And it should, like the iPhone, this only affects iPhone 6, iPhone SE, iPhone 6S, and with iOS 11.2, they're starting to bring iPhone 7 into it as well. If you have an iPhone 5S or earlier, it will still shut down. And this is not unique to Apple. There's reports as of yesterday of Samsung Galaxy Notes shutting down. Well, and there's old stories.
Okay, so this is the second story, which is HTC, LG, Motorola, and Samsung, all Android handset manufacturers said, we don't do this. Which led more fuel to the fire because...
But no, because like if you go back a couple, even like OnePlus earlier this year and several years ago, Anantec and Geekbench caught them never running their CPUs at peak. Only for benchmark apps would they run them at peak. And the reason Samsung gave in their statement was because they didn't want to overload the GPU or the CPU. And that's the same. We have increasingly desktop quality processors in devices that have teeny tiny little phone sized batteries, and you can't balance those things. You only have to make choices about which one you're going to prioritize.
You do, in fact, see this on even laptops. You'll get an i7 on a laptop, but because of thermal issues, you'll never see it run at full speed. It'll always be somewhat slowed down. So this is similar to that.
And iPads will, like iPads, the battery is so big that it doesn't, people have been asking about that a lot. iPads, the battery is so big, the density is so high that it never hit, even when the batteries have to get really, really old before you start seeing any unexpected shutdowns or degradation.
So they don't do this in iPads. They only do this in iPhones.
No.
Yeah, well, I thought the SE was fairly modern, but I guess it's an iPhone 6S.
It's the iPhone 6S platform, so it's the 6, 6S, SE, and now the iPhone 7.
But you wouldn't see this on a brand new SE or an SE that's less than a year or so old. How old does a battery have to be before you start to see this?
Apple will only replace it when it hits 80% capacity, which is the magic number for them. But you might see this when it starts getting to around 85%, which was also part of the problem because Apple Care didn't really understand it, and they were refusing to replace batteries that didn't hit that magic 80% number. Even though damage is not always consistent, like if you put your iPhone on a radiator or leave it out in the heat in Arizona or on an air vent, in a freezing cold New England day, that heat damages that battery far greater than its age might otherwise indicate.
Yes. So Apple got some heat, if so to speak, at first for the conspiracy theory that they were doing this on purpose. Apple's explanation seems to have calmed most people down. But people are still mad at Apple, saying you should have communicated this.
Well, people are suing them.
And there's a $999 billion lawsuit against Apple.
I feel really bad about this because Apple did, like, I don't know who was briefed, but Apple did briefings for iOS 10.3.2 and their phone briefings where they sit you down. And Apple's marketing team are incredibly smart. A lot of them have engineering degrees. They really know their products. And they explained the issue and what they were doing to it. And they talked about advanced battery power management. And I never asked what that meant, and I didn't bother to explain it. But there's no magic involved.
They didn't hide it. Nobody asked them.
They should have expressly said we are doing exactly A, B, C, D in order to fix. But the term they used was advanced, and I know what power management is because they throttle for thermals, and I understand basically how the system works. And it never occurred. They never explained it. I never asked.
Yeah.
And a year later, I feel like a complete moron. And it's not entirely on me, but I do feel my responsibility.
That's totally beside the point. It's like I just last month or the month before, my MacBook battery started to die, and I got a warning from the operating system saying, "Hey, your battery is starting to become really, really unhealthy." Followed by, "Hey, your battery is definitely broken. You definitely need to get it replaced right now." So there's we have to wonder what Apple's excuse was for not putting up some sort of a dialogue or some sort of a checkbox at some point saying, "Hey, I noticed that your battery is really, really old. I think you're going to want to take it, get the battery replaced soon. Also making sure people know that if you go to the Apple store, they'll charge you only about like $99 out of warranties, $79 or something when it's closer to warranty. Or at least just inform people that this is what's going on and this is what we're going to do to make your experience better." And that people would have liked that, as opposed to all the people that in the past year have come to me saying, "Hey, my battery, for some reason, my phone is really, really slow all of a sudden. I don't know why that's happened." And people leaping to the conclusion that Apple has intentionally slowed down my phone because they want to get me to buy a new one. At which point, I have to explain to them that Apple is really, really good at making you make an emotional decision to buy a new phone without crippling your old one. I mean, this was clearly a problem over the past year. And was something that as simple as tell the pilot the status of their aircraft at all times. There's no reason for Apple to have hidden this from the user. So it doesn't matter whether Apple should have briefed the press or briefed other people about what was happening last year. You tell the user that I'm going to make your phone go really slow right now, and this is why I'm making that happen. And if worse comes to worse, if you would rather just have the phone die at 40%, that's up to you, but here's what's happening with your phone and what we want to do about it.
So there was a problem with this. So there was a dialogue. Apple did put it into the battery settings, but it wasn't a pop-up. You had to go look for it. And also, it seems to be triggered way too late in the cycle. Like, you seem to be down throttled well before that dialogue. I was actually talking to John Poole on a podcast, and he's like, "I never got a dialogue." And there it is.
He saw it. How funny.
Yeah.
How funny.
Which was much later than when he ran all his tests, which isn't really helpful to him.
Right.
And I think it almost would have been better if Apple let your phone fail once. You absolutely understand the problem. And then when it came up, it said your iPhone shut down unexpectedly. We can manage this so it won't happen again, but you will have reduced performance. Do you want to do that or do you want to make a genius appointment?
And I think a lot of times, Apple works pretty hard at not having people have to make decisions. You know, like you know, I think that's
if Apple fails in communication, it's always that.
Yeah, it's always like, we'll do it for you.
You don't need to know this. We're just going to handle it. And they're right. 99% of people wouldn't notice, except for all the news stories.
Right.
And it fits in with a conspiracy
thing. But I had like
now, I think they did the right thing, though, because now they've announced, final point in the story, that they're going to offer battery upgrades for $50 off, $29.
$29 is great.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
What's the criterion for that? Do you have to prove that it's 85% or 80%?
No, so 80% was the old criteria, but it's my understanding, and I think Apple's going to talk about this later today. It's my understanding that, or they gave MacRumors maybe a comment about it already. They're going to started doing it way before they originally said. They originally said they were going to do it mid-January because they wanted time to ramp up supply. But they said they're going to start doing it now, and they'll ramp up as they go. And apparently they're not going to worry about the diagnostics. Like maybe if you bring a brand new phone in, they'll say, dude, this is a brand new phone. It's 100%. You don't need a replacement. But if your phone is anywhere has any sort of significant wear to it, I think they're just going to replace it. No questions asked.
It says, according to the story I just saw in MacRumors, that they won't do any diagnostic tests. They'll just go, okay,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Based
yeah,
on the
yeah.
age of that phone.
And
go ahead.
And at $29, I can't imagine anything more than cost. I mean, for Apple, because that's
to go through the labor cost.
Just the labor cost.
So will they do it on the spot? The genius will take it in the back. They have a machine, right, that opens it up.
Yeah, I mean, some models absolutely, I believe are easier than others, and I don't know offhand. This is about the 6, 6S, and SE. I don't imagine they'll be doing too many 7s at this point, but it could be just as simple as that.
If you brought in a 7 and said, "Hey, it feels slow," would they?
That's
just
a year
do
old
it?
Now, but you know, you never.
I know.
See, that's the problem is that there's two problems. One, the first one I mentioned is that people now are equating performance to battery, but also there's a bunch of reasons why your iPhone might be slower than it was before, and only one of them is battery related. And people it's going to be an easy excuse for anything. Oh, my iPhone is slow, and they'll just bring it in and they go, but you're running Snapchat 24 hours a day. You know, that's just going to bog down your iPhone. You're running photo filters all the time. That's slowing down your iPhone. So I think there's going to be a little bit of education involved. But for most people, if you're having any problem at all, just take it in and get it swapped.
Lawn Dog in our chat room says, consider the Apple technician, the Apple genius, who isn't apprised of this information, who's trying to figure out why your phone is slow, acknowledges that it's slow, but doesn't know why it's slow. Is that the case? Is that until now, the technicians, the geniuses didn't even know about this?
Some did, some didn't. It seems like it wasn't, like again, Apple should have made sure that they put that patch out, that information was then projected to everybody who has a customer service facing role.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, I think Renee and I probably have the same sort of reaction to bad tech news. You kind of gauge how bad a PR problem this is by how many times in the course of a day do I get a call from a radio station wanting me to come on the show and talk about this thing, where it's like with net neutrality, it was like it wasn't as many people as I had hoped. But when it becomes something as easy for people to understand as is Apple crippling the speed of your phone? Everybody got that one.
Yeah.
I basically had to block out an afternoon just to handle all the Skype stuff and all the phone stuff. That's just to say that this is a problem that was so easy for people to understand. So it's a very, very good thing for Apple to have responded this quickly and this transparently and saying that, hey, here's the problem. Here it is in detail. And we're going to make it so easy for you to swap out a battery that you will just come down just to use the free Wi-Fi. And why don't you get a replacement battery while you're here having your Orange Julius.
Who should do this?
Yeah.
You can download. There are plenty of somebody in the chat room. Scooter, I think, was saying the coconut battery monitor is a good one. But you can download.
Apple's going to push their own. So Apple's going to do a software update for iOS because those apps can't really get close to the metal the way that Apple can.
Uh-huh.
So an upcoming version of iOS, it might be 2.5, it might be 3, is going to have battery health indicator the way they currently have, like the battery usage indicator.
Good.
So you'll get a good idea about it.
It's also a good reminder that because your Apple, if you have an Apple store nearby, it doesn't cost anything for them to diagnose a problem for you. If you're having any problem whatsoever, anything that's going weird with a device, definitely just make it a point that the next time you're kind of near the mall or kind of near the store, make an appointment, have it checked out. Because even if it's something that is, this is a device that's 2 or 3 years old, it's well out of warranty. I was thinking about buying a new iPhone anyway. You never know what they can do for you. I had my own experience with that MacBook battery was they wound up seeing that there were a couple of damaged cells inside the battery pack. And even though it was well out of warranty, they decided to give me a new battery, no charge for labor, no charge for hardware. So Apple service is rather awesome. And you're denying yourself some excellence if you don't take advantage of it.
And this sort of speaks to the conspiracy theories too, because when you talk to Apple, to a person, they never want to make you feel like you're forced to get a new phone because they recognize there's a danger you'll switch to another company. If you're angry enough at your iPhone, your next phone might not be an iPhone. And they figure it is better, easier, and ultimately nobler for them to just make your experience so great with this iPhone that by default, your next phone will be an iPhone.
Yeah.
If you have an iPhone 6, a 6S, or an SE, should you just go to the Apple Store today?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're
going to
put,
but definitely.
To Andy's point, maybe not today because everyone's there. Yeah. But right now, do it the same way. It is cold. You do it the same way you would request any sort of battery exchange, but they're going to put specific information up on Apple.com for how this swap is going to happen.
Oh, so don't just wander in.
You can for now. Like for now, just go like make an appointment the way you would to get your battery changed if nothing else had happened. But they're going to, I guess because they're anticipating huge volumes for this, they're going to have specific instructions available.
And if you have a 7, maybe not so much. Or, you know, I mean, I guess it's up to you. Problem with slow is it's so subjective that people psychologically might say, well, this just feels slow.
I have a 6S I know that I felt. It was really so slow that I bought another one pretty quick, you know, the next year, you know, because it was sluggish, you know. And so I definitely think that there's, and I probably, and other things that affect your battery health are things like leaving it plugged in all night, which I try to avoid doing when I can, you know, because if it sits and does this little trickle on and off, on and off, on and off, it's really bad for your battery.
Right. In our chat room, former genius 937 says, as a former genius, they don't tell us anything until the public already knows. Yeah. So they geniuses weren't told. There wasn't a bulletin that went out, as there should have been probably. Hey, just so you know, what version of iOS did this start with, Renee?
10.3.2 for the iPhone 6 platform and 11.2 for the iPhone 7 platform.
Okay. So the most recent when one was that? That was last year sometime.
It was last February for the iPhone 6s and just the last update for the iPhone 7s.
And you may have gotten that update and not seen any change, and then your battery got below 80%.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And then you would see the change all of a sudden.
It was terrible. I was having breakfast with a friend who, as happens every couple of months, someone was coming to me with, hey, why is my phone slow all of a sudden? And I went through the usual list of reasons why, again, without knowledge of the battery issue at this point, or at least with it being front of my mind. And it wasn't until like 3 or 4 days later that I was able to come back to him with all the data saying, here's what's going on with your phone. Because usually when someone comes to me with a problem and I don't have a specific answer, I will then, even if I tried and failed months earlier, I'll try again to see what's out there. And unfortunately, he went out and decided to buy a new phone after 2 or 3 years anyway.
Wow.
But that's exactly, it's just because goes to show that this is what is on people's minds, that my phone is slow. They don't understand everything that goes into the performance of a device. And so buying a new one, if that was in the back of your mind anyway, that's going to be where they're going to go to. And then they will feel a little bit of resentment that I should, God's plan for when I buy a new phone is when I leave it behind in an airplane seat or drop it down a toilet. It should not be because it is now too slow to do the stuff that I want to do with it.
And I mean, we do like get more intensive. Like Animoji hits an iPhone 10 really hard, and portrait lighting hits an iPhone 8 really hard, and portrait mode hits an iPhone 7 real hard. And we're putting things in here that are incredibly demanding on incredibly powerful processors that essentially have the same batteries that we've had for years. And they're getting better at managing them, but the battery chemistry isn't getting better.
Yeah. I was amazed at when I flew back from Pittsburgh last week, my daughter was able to burn through an iPad Pro. In 2.5 hours playing Minecraft. Wow. Only half the flight. Let me point that out. Only half the flight.
So somebody said I said something wrong. Teddy says, where did Apple say that the throttle begins at less than 80%? They said a year. Leo is wrong. Is it time or is it checking the battery?
It's health. So it's health. It's battery.
It's not time at all.
No, Apple hasn't said how they do it. And there have been some guesses. And Anantech said maybe it's a simple, like it hits a clock and it goes off, or maybe it's something dynamic where it's continually reading state. We don't know that part.
My experience with software that checks lithium ion batteries, and I have it on a lot of laptops, is it can say battery health.
Yeah.
So it shows, and it's in milliamp hours. It's in capacity. It shows the nominal capacity when the battery is new, and then the current capacity based on how many charge cycles it's gone through, yes, and how much heat and whatever stress it's gone through. And those battery sensors, I don't know if it's specious or not, but they seem to be able to say, here's your battery health. Here's the maximum charge you get. And what you're saying, Renee, is it's somewhere around 85 or 80% of the maximum. That's when this is going to kick in.
80% is the mark when Apple will change your battery.
That's when they'll give you a new battery.
They haven't said what the mark is for this.
They haven't said when this kicks in.
It would be somewhere around the level where the battery is no longer considered.
So, I mean, Apple knows the battery health. There's no reason for them to use a simple calendar. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that varies per user. If you don't charge your phone that often.
If you don't charge it that often, if you don't leave it plugged in for too long of a period of time, if you don't put it out in excessive heat, if you don't excessive cold.
Which is also what helps iPads, because people don't charge them as much. They don't use them out in the cold or out of the heat.
Yeah.
But I mean, the best thing is to just make sure it sounds counterintuitive, but make sure that if there's a battery powered device, you spend as much time using it on battery as possible. That I've sort of had to retrain myself to make sure that my laptop, my phone, my tablets, everything else, that I will just charge it up. When it's charged, I unplug it and then I drain the battery down to at least 20% before I consider charging up again. That's the way that you lead to the best health for the battery lifetime.
Yeah.
And Apple will also tell you that they're doing a lot of – like what Andy and Alex are saying are absolutely true, and there's all sorts of things. You don't want it to get hot. Fast chargers are technically worse than slow chargers. So while you're saying, you know, oh, we're behind on Qualcomm, fast chargers hit the chemicals in the battery much harder than regular chargers. But Apple's going to do everything it can to manage the charge up to the 50% mark so that you can charge quicker, you can charge longer, you can go back on battery more often. It's just – it's going to manage those as best as possible. But if you want the utmost battery help, then there's...
And Renee, you shouldn't charge your phone with 2.4 amps?
You can't. If you talk to Apple, they will say use the iPod plug, use all those things, because we'll manage it and we'll degrade it when we need to, we'll increase it when we need to, we'll automatically dip it down, we'll automatically push it back up. So a lot of the old tips for lithium ion don't seem to be as important now because they're doing all that for us. But I'm still conservative. I still use the small charger overnight because I'm sleeping. I don't need it to charge in 3 hours. I'm asleep. It can charge as slowly as it wants to. And I don't use quick charges when I don't have to. And, you know, I try to follow all those practices. Right. And I wear it down when I can.
Okay. Have we flattened this? I think we flattened this story. There's one last question, though, I'd ask all of you. Did Apple handle this properly? I take it, Andy, you don't think so.
They handled it properly once it became a big fufflemonger. But before that, they definitely should have. There's no reason for them not to have made it explicit to the user what they were doing to the device when that was happening. Yeah. Especially now that we've had this really, really transparent knowledge of this is what people think about Apple. They don't think that, oh, there's a problem with my phone, it needs to be fixed. They think that, oh, my phone has become obsolete after only 2.5 years. They want me to buy a brand new one.
Yeah.
So, but they responded to this very, very well. They didn't blame the user. They just said, here's what's happening. We could have been a little bit more transparent with this. And here's how we're making sure that people who need new batteries will get new batteries.
You agree?
Yeah. I'd say the initial communication was not good. I feel like their reaction to it was better than most. I mean, definitely better than I think Samsung did with their battery issue, which was catching fire. So I think Apple did better than most companies do once they were in a bind. I think that they got out in front of it. They made an offer. They said, this is how we're going to handle it. That offer, I think, is very fair. I think in a lot of ways, we're getting a pretty good deal. If you've got an older phone and you're able to now replace it for $29, the whole thing is a pretty awesome thing to have happen. Is you're going to get a new battery for as little as you were going to get it for the same price as a cable.
Right.
Well, to give us some sense, I think iFixit, if you do the labor yourself, charges $29 for the battery. I think that's their price.
It's a killer deal. It's a killer deal. There's a lot of people winning out on this already. I think to Apple's probably strategic credit, is it really is going to make the lawsuit complicated because people are benefiting from it already.
A lot of goodwill, I think, accrues to Apple for being quick. And you agree, Renee?
Yeah, I think, again, they should have explained this much better from the start, and I think their reaction was good. You'll never please anybody. I saw people on Twitter today going, oh, this is Apple's sneaky plan to get a bunch of batteries moving through their supply chain. So you will never make everybody happy, but I think their response was as good as possible, and I agree, this is a great deal for people who have older devices that are going to have a new battery, and that's a big part of the experience of the device, so go get it.
Yeah, go get it, yeah. This is coconut battery. This is a battery health program that works on iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, as well as Macintosh. And it gives you, you know, the basic. I use something like this anyway on my laptops. And it shows you the number of charges, the cycle count. All lithium-ion batteries, as Neo's pointing out in the chat room, have a cycle count. But more to the point, what's your designed capacity and your current capacity? And what percentage of the design capacity are you getting? And that's relevant to, you know, the temperature. It is affected by a lot of things, obviously. All right. Well, I think battery gate can now be put to bed.
Be closed. We can close the battery gate.
Close the case on battery gate. What do you just, given that the Android guys jumped on this and said, well, we don't do this, you think they're just letting it crash? Their phones crash?
Yeah, I think they're doing exactly what Apple used to do and what they still do for the 5S. Like, again, it's physics and chemistry. There's no way to cheat on this stuff.
Yeah. There's no OS level battery management to the extent that Apple is doing on Android. So that's like a car manufacturer saying, well, we will never compromise the performance of our cars with traction control.
We would never do that.
Keep the car safe.
There's also a mitigation on Android where Apple's got incredibly good single core performance, and most of the Android chipsets don't come near that, so they're not causing those spikes. And often they have bigger batteries, which means that they can sustain the spikes a little bit better.
Interesting.
So when you mix those two things together, you're offsetting it a little bit. But as we've seen, you know, it happens. It's just happening at different points.
And because of all the different kinds of hardware, you really have to build the solution for the battery pack that you're creating. So Google would really have to create a brand new section of the OS just for battery life management and make sure that gets tuned for every, it gets a profile for every phone out there.
Yeah.
But this is Schadenfreude on the part of the Android manufacturers. It's nonsense.
8 lawsuits to date, including that $999 billion lawsuit.
Feels like.
Apparently in France, there's a lawsuit launched because it's against the law. France is one of the few countries where you can't have planned obsolescence. But again, that goes to what Apple's saying about this. This wasn't planned obsolescence. And I think they've successfully defended that.
And I think this fundamentally comes down to how you use your phone. You know, I think Apple's making sure that you can use it as a phone for as long as possible. And it slows down all the other bits and pieces of it so that it can keep on doing that so that you don't have the issues. I've had one of those phones that was dying at 40%, which was mind-numbingly frustrating because you're in constant frustration and fear that your phone was going to turn off, you know, and so it was really a
that's
thing
no
that became upsetting. I would have rather had it slow down. Yeah. The one thing I will say, we were talking about charging. I think there's some confusion in the IRC in the chat, the window about, you know, Rene said he charges overnight. I said don't charge, you know, don't leave it on overnight. You know, I think it depends. I mean, the idea is that you don't want to, if you're charging it slower, it's better, but you don't want to leave it just sitting there on a charge, as you know, all the time. What I do, I actually have all of my cables at home have LEDs in them. And so they look kind of cool because it comes out of like one of those anchors and they all have LED and they all, you see them all moving. And the reason I do that is so that I can look up and see that something's not charging anymore. I just unplug it, you know, but it's,
See, I leave mine on and I have been told that all modern lithium ion batteries have circuitry so that they don't overcharge, which would be one concern. Of course, what is happening is they're going down a little bit and up a little bit, down a little bit, up a bit.
And that's the problem.
But the total, the number of cycles is a total charge discharge or discharge charge. So,
well, I've been told that little start stop is bad. It's bad for the battery.
Okay.
One of the things that's bad for the battery.
Okay.
It's not a full cycle, but it's still
there. By the way, there's a lot of some misinformation about batteries in general.
And also they change because the battery management systems keep changing.
Right. And even battery experts disagree. The chemistry is complicated. And I've had battery experts in here and had disagreements between them.
I was talking to Carl Howell, the longtime analyst, and he had a great analogy. He said, you know, Apple is sitting there like the person running the power grid, and they're going, I have a blackout coming or a brownout coming. Level one is blackout. Level two is brownout. Which one do I pull?
Yeah, so you pick the brownout.
That's
actually
what your choice is. Yeah,
the brownout. I think part of it is that most of us aren't going to be using this device for more than a few years. So a little bit of wear on the lithium ion battery overcomes It's really good on a wireless charger, right? All night. Now I'm thinking I shouldn't do that.
I don't know. I mean,
you think the best thing to do is let it. You don't want to run it down too low.
Right.
I've been giving the advice, and this was actually from Steve Gibson, who I think found this information on Battery Expert's site, that leave battery-powered devices plugged in. If you're storing it, store it at half charge.
Yeah.
And heat's bad, but there's no conditioning. Oh, and the one other bad thing is to fully discharge it. You don't want to fully, like, completely drain a lithium-ion battery. But the advice I've been giving, and this is from Steve, and I'll have to ask Steve, is leave it plugged in. Like, if you have a laptop, leave it plugged in.
You can go to Apple support. They have a whole page on how to take care of lithium-ion batteries, broken down per product as well.
Yeah. You'll get a new device with lithium-ion batteries, and in the box is completely wrong instructions about things condition. Don't use this unless you charge it all the way. You know, conditioning.
And it's hard to test it. It's like you have to be really committed. Like, in a year, I'm gonna buy six phones and I'm gonna treat them differently over the next year. It's just hard to know exactly which one is the best one. I guess for me, the theories, what I read made sense, and so I just kind of, what I do is I have chargers everywhere that I can
conveniently do it. Though, for most people, not to just plug it in at night and have it fully charged in the morning.
When there's when there's inductive charging pads everywhere, Leo will just trickle charge all day and we'll never have to think about it again.
That's what Alex is saying is bad.
Well, I don't worry that much about the thing is you have to think about the larger workflow. For me, for the phone, I need to make sure I don't forget to charge it. And if that's part of my routine, that I get into bed, I put my phone onto the charger on the nightstand, that will make sure there's 100% battery, as opposed to wondering why I've had such a quiet morning, and it's because my battery died at 4 a.m. And so I'm getting no texts and no notifications. So whatever works for you, I'm willing to sacrifice a little bit of battery survivability for that. For notebooks, however, I would say don't leave it plugged in. I would just say that at some point during the course of the week, you have to make sure you unplug it and let that battery exercise itself, because I really do think that's what causes a lot of batteries to die prematurely. If you never give it a chance to discharge, if it's always going between 98% and 100% all the time because it's being left on charger, I do think that that's what kills a battery much, much earlier than it would otherwise.
Often the heat associated with charging. So especially if you are charging, you're charging long, you're charging often, that builds up heat and heat degrades the chemistry in a lithium-ion battery. It's always heat, Leo. Heat's the enemy.
I don't know what the answer is on this. I think there's a lot of misinformation. If you Google, should I leave my laptop plugged in all the time? there's lots of conflicting information. What I really want is not How To Geek or Grist or Fossbytes. I want a battery guru. So if you're a battery guru, here's one from AskLeo.com. It's not me. If you're a battery guru, Rick's daily tips. Everybody has an answer for this, but I think a lot of this is more anecdotal than science-based. So if you're a battery expert, please. My attitude is there's circuitry in modern batteries, that protect it against overcharge, overheating. They can slow down the charge.
There's actually a battery university.
Yeah, that's the place I've quoted before. What does battery university say?
No, it's too long, too many words.
I think battery university is the one that told me to leave it plugged in, but I don't know.
Like, they have all these graphs. Like, just give me a list of what I'm supposed to do.
Chemistry is hard.
Yeah,
I know. Which is funny, because what's happening is your battery is actually becoming more stable. It's lack of life, it's entropy, it's because there's more electrons that have found each other. Go, hey, let's just stick together. Let's not. Okay. Next time we get electricity, just
battery university. How to prolong lithium ion based batteries. Read that and get back to us, would you?
I guess if you just take away the fact that batteries can be replaced, even if the thing is sealed up, there's a way to replace the battery from the manufacturer or from a nice, lovely informational page on iFixit. And there are almost certainly going to be a utility you can download for that device that will tell you the health of that battery. So you'll burn your hand on the stove, and that will teach you exactly what you've been doing wrong with charging your battery. It'll work out okay. It'll be okay. It's even though 2017 is over with, we still have far bigger problems in this world than does my battery last for 4.8 years or 4.4 years?
Here's the salient paragraph from Battery University. The question is asked, should I disconnect my laptop from the power grid when not used? Under normal circumstances, this should not be necessary because charging stops when the lithium ion battery is full. A topping charge is only applied when the battery voltage drops to a certain level. Most users do not remove the AC power. This practice is safe. They say, what can the user do? Environmental conditions, not cycling alone, govern the longevity of lithium ion batteries. The worst situation is keeping a fully charged battery at elevated temperatures.
I often tell my wife that as we discuss the fact that I like to keep the house at 64 degrees because it's better for
a laptop battery could be prolonged by lowering the charge voltage when connected to the AC grid. Do you have that capability? Make this feature user-friendly, a device should feature a long life mode that keeps the battery at a certain voltage. But that's not offered. Well, you know, a lot of this is done automatically in the circuitry on your on your laptop and your phone.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Even Battery University is somewhat equivocal in their advice.
The bottom link I just posted, Leo, is Apple's Maximizing Performance, which is their tips on how to take care of each Apple product. And
I guess, you know, given it's an Apple device, do what Apple says.
At least it doesn't come with a warning. When I got the Iris drone, it has all these warnings about, you know, not to ever leave the batteries alone by themselves. It comes with a fire shield.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, I got the wrong.
Airlines,
you know, it's now, some camera batteries.
People are asking me when I get on the plane, do you have any lithium ion batteries? Well, of course I do.
Right.
I have a phone. I mean, of course I do.
Some people have
no.
And that's been an issue lately, too.
Of course I do.
My backpack now is full of all these batteries for all my stuff because, I'll pack all the gear. And then I pack all the batteries into my backpack because I can't check them anymore. And now my away bag, that's the new problem. Fortunately, I'm flying United, which hasn't put the crackdown on, but Delta, American.
A lot of them do that.
Have now said you can't, unless you can pull the battery out.
You have to carry everything, all your electronics on the plane.
I did get on one plane because I got to the thing on a little puddle jumper, and they said, "Oh, you have to check the bag." And I said, "I can't because it's an away bag, and you guys don't let me check those." And then they went, "Okay, you can go ahead." And I was like,
"I think that is awesome." Even they don't understand.
Alex had the Iron Man suit in
they
there.
They sympathize. Just check it. So here, I do have a quadcopter drone tip for you, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, don't try to fly your Mavic Pro in a heavy wind at sea while the boat is pitching.
Oh, that didn't turn out too well.
Is it? Day one.
Oh. It does fly very cold. I've tested it in very cold weather.
It flew just fine. In fact, it was really interesting to keep position. It was the operator who was trying to land the thing as the boat's going like this and the wind's going like this, and then it hit the wire guardrail, and it went froop, and it went into the water. At that point, I wasn't diving in.
I was watching Michael Fisher's video on his drone, he loved the drone so much, and he's flying it, and it goes over a building and never comes back, and he's just so sad.
It's gone.
Just gone.
So anybody, I have the extra batteries, the extra wings, the charger, anybody needs that. I just don't have the drone.
Everything but the drone.
I have a battery
like
that just won't work.
Garfield minus Garfield. They're
smart batteries.
I'll trade you a battery. You have a Mavic Pro, right?
I do. I was thinking,
so I have two choices now. I could just buy a new Mavic Pro for $1,000.
Yep. Extra batteries.
And I have plenty of batteries now. Or I could buy what's the one with the better camera, the DJI Phantom 4, but that's like $3,000.
The one that I'm going to get soon is probably going to be the Inspire 2 with the Zenmuse X7.
How much is that?
It's not cheap.
I just bought an iMac Pro. I won't be buying anything for the rest of the year.
It costs about the same as your iMac Pro.
Did you fly the iMac Pro? And you just,
I wish I could
just
fly
get
that.
A controller?
I bought this before the end of the year, so that's a tax deduction.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Anyway, you want my batteries? You can have them. Okay. I brought them back. Good. I thought it'd be a mistake for me to buy another drone. My history with drones is not good.
The Mavic, I have to say, the Mavic has been
Charlie
my best
Brown
casual.
And the tree.
I've had the best luck with the Mavic.
Oh, the Mavic. That's why I was confident.
Yeah.
On dry land, when it's not pitching and there's no high winds, it's fine.
Had a problem with it over the,
tornado,
over the last week.
So
it was drifting, like GPS drift. Like it would just slowly drift to the side. I think I just didn't have the... But it was too cold to calibrate because it was 6 degrees outside. And I couldn't feel my hands.
I would kill for a balmy 6 degrees right now.
I've got in a month or two all the Amazon credits that I got from like recommending books and stuff during Black Friday is going to come in, and I try to make it a point to spend that money on silly things, and I'm finding it so I'm finding the draw of the drone just so compelling at this point.
It is so much fun. Yeah. Drones have become. So, I mean, I've been using them for years and crashing them for years, and I've gone through a lot of drones. And it's finally gotten to a point where it actually works. It actually, you know, you just, oh, I'm going to go out. I carry this little Mavic around all the time and in my backpack. And I'm just like, oh, I think I'm going to do a little drone work and just fly around. I use it for establishing shots for our live shows. I mean, you know, all kinds of stuff. And it's just so much fun. And it just looks like, it looks so epic. I was doing these flyovers of my parents' house, which is in the middle of nowhere. And it's just this huge. You feel like you're watching a movie, like a big feature film, you know. And it's fun. I would highly recommend even just a small one, just like a little.
Yeah.
The Mavic is great.
I like the Mavic.
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't had a lot of success
with
the smaller
ones. I've heard it's really well recommended.
I really liked it.
I'm going to be living next to a river. I just want to get one and fly it out over the river.
But I got the Mavic specifically so I could wreck it.
Renee, that's exactly the same thing with me. Like now that I'm living in like a sort of a downtown sort of area, it's like all the way from, hey, was that the FedEx truck I just heard? Just I'll send out the drone to like reconnoiter. There's a great sandwich shop next door that can the Mavic like support just a tiny basket and maybe not the 12-inch hero sandwich, but maybe the 6-inch sub.
But your drone has to have a hat and the chops, because that way we just have the Andy drone going down the streets. It would be awesome.
Yeah. You guys are making
and lasers
so sad.
And lasers.
You're gonna have to go get another one.
I'm not gonna get another one. I learned my lesson.
I guess Leo doesn't want one of Renee and Andy's drone sandwiches then. That's fine.
Yeah,
it's just
more Leo, drone sandwiches for Renee and Andy.
You just need some common sense. There's a certain level of like I walked outside and I felt a little wind. If I look up and see the trees vibrating a little bit, I'm like, this is not a flight day. You know, like this is, you know, yeah. I'm gonna go back in because I want to keep my drone.
But I want to keep.
I feel like just like the lunar rover when they start flying like Apollo missions with the lunar rover. The rule is that you can't drive any place where you can't walk back from safely. And so if I got a drone, it would be I'm not allowed to fly the drone anywhere where I couldn't walk out there, pick it up off the floor, and then take it back.
And then you realize that it's just not gonna turn. Like I had a this other drone that I will leave unnamed, but it kept on wanting to pull. Like you'd be flying it and suddenly it would just kind of pull off one direction. And I felt like it was kind of manageable, but one day it just pulled and it just went. And it just disappeared and over the. Fortunately, I was in the middle of nowhere, but it just disappeared. I've never seen it again. It just went into the woods. Like it just kept on. I don't know how many miles it flew up. Flew.
It's a really bad feeling when that happens. It's just you need to fit it with a restraining. When it just goes over the railing of the boat.
Yeah.
And it just goes. There's nothing. It's gone.
I had a problem solved. if it were hanging over the railing, I would have the opportunity to risk my life to get it back. But now, problem solved. I don't have to fix anything.
DJI used to have a thing you could automatically turn it off immediately if you just push the two controllers down and in. And I was doing these acrobatics.
I think they
with
still
it.
Have that.
I don't think it doesn't. But I think that now it doesn't lands. Do it while it'll land.
Yeah.
But in the earlier versions, I was doing acrobatics, like getting to spin at a certain pace and turn, and you know, and somehow I got into that, and it just dropped out of the sky 30 feet up. And
I have to say, I don't feel as bad as the guy who designed Apple's Chicago store.
Oh God.
it's a great store. I've been there.
Do you think it was an architect in California? See, here's the problem. See those giant icicles hanging off the lip of the store?
That's awesome.
If you were to walk under and it were to fall off on your head. And by the way, as you all know, who live in, you know, snowy climes, icicles do fall off.
Yeah.
It would,
big chunks of ice.
It would kill you. In fact, yeah. I think there's an Agatha Christie or some sort of murder mystery where you kill the guy with an icicle. Because the murder weapon melts.
You just tell kids that there's snowballs and there's icicles. And I mean, that was a big sport when I was a kid, was knocking icicles down with snowballs.
Apple needs some kids with a snowball.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a great way. We've all said that like there are too many people like in line for the brand new iPhone. Now it's like how much skin are you willing to put in the game to be number one in line right at the door, like when a brand new device is created?
Exactly.
But there was another story, I forget which one, but it was in California.
Before we get off this, though, Blair Kamen, who's the architectural credit for the Chicago Tribune across the river from us, actually did a really good post about it. Basically, the Apple's official statement was that, yes, of course, they anticipated that it's going to be terrible winters in Chicago, that the roof actually has a heating system that will keep ice from actually forming, and the water is supposed to go to special channels that are hidden inside pillars, and this is all computer controlled. They just haven't dialed – I guess they just didn't dial it in correctly.
It's not as bad as a mistake as it looks.
Exactly. It means it's brand new building. You have to, you're not going to figure it out until things are actually in play. Also, he makes a really good statement. And again, if you go to ChicagoTribune.com, again, tip the hat to the folks across the river. He makes a really good point that this is what happens if you want to have really cool architecture. You have to occasionally you're going to have, you know, not missteps, but you're going to have problems like this. He mentions that, like, in Millennium Park, there's this beautiful, like, Frank Gehry designed, I think, walkway that's like all beautiful natural wood that they have to close down when it gets too cold and winter and icy, because if they sent like a snow thrower over there, it would like scrape the hell out of it. But that means that the fact that doesn't mean that they failed to continue to consider winter in Chicago. It's because they want to have this beautiful wooden walkway, and it's okay for them to have to shut it down occasionally when the weather is bad. So I'm sure they'll fix it. And the challenge of competing in an architectural city like Chicago, where you've got to bring it. You can't just say, oh, look, we made a square cube. No. This is Chicago, man. You've got to bring it with the architecture. And so I'm sure that they'll have this problem solved very, very quickly, and they'll be left with what is still a beautiful addition to the catalog of Chicago buildings.
I think it's the nicest Apple store I've walked into, and I've been in a lot of Apple stores.
It's gorgeous.
It was just unbelievable. Better than the Fifth Avenue
flagship store?
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, because the Fifth Avenue Apple store, it's all underground. You're in with the mall people, whereas this is like a plaza. This is like public space.
It's beautiful on the outside. It's beautiful when you walk in. When you walk down, it's very inviting. There's all little places to sit. The LED wall is the nicest LED wall I've ever seen. And I see a lot of LED walls. And it's just everything about it was really nice, except for the hard drive selection. It's very anemic.
Who goes to Apple stores to buy hard drives?
It was nearby
a job, and I didn't have.
I would give you a Tesseract. That's a Chicago way. That's how you build an Apple store.
It was the shortest drive, and I needed it quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
We need someone to redo if I remember how in the Fifth Avenue store they wound up having to or deciding to replace the panels because they found a better way of doing it. So if they ever have to like replace the glass, I want somebody to recreate like the Blues Brothers like arrival at Dealey Plaza where they just drive through the glass.
Oh,
one,
my God.
One side and another, oh, two donuts through
Wouldn't
and then
that be
out
awesome?
Again.
Here's a story that broke right after we did our last Mac Break Weekly and left for the holidays. And Mark Gurman in Bloomberg, he's still getting those rumors. Apple plans combined iPhone, iPad, and Mac apps to create one user experience. This has been rumored for a long time that Apple would somehow merge Mac OS and iOS. Now that I have an iMac Pro, I hope they don't do that.
Well, this is not that, though. This is one of those stories where it's widely misinterpreted.
Okay.
So what's been happening for a while is a lot of developers got into making iOS apps because UIKit was more modern than AppKit, and it was much more approachable.
Right.
And many of those people have wanted Apple to sort of bring UIKit to the Mac platform because they find it so approachable. And Apple's done some things, like they did UXKit to bring Photos.app over. And it's not the best app, but it did show that there were some ways of starting to bridge that gap. And this is called Marzipan. That's the code name that Mark talked about. And it's not really a user experience so much as, at least my understanding is, even at the engineering level at Apple, they've brought the teams together so that the core of the apps are being worked on together because it's just more efficient that way. Like the core for messages on iOS and macOS is built by the same team, and then different teams do the interfaces that are appropriate. And this sounds like the same thing where they want to get it to a point where, let's say I get really into iOS engineering and I want to make a Mac app. I don't have to go and then learn a completely separate pipeline. The frameworks are the same already. Largely, there's some similar frameworks, but they just want to make the process of making these apps more efficient at the core level. So you'll have one sort of engine for your app, and then you'll still have to build appropriate user interfaces for it to suit the platform, the same way you would for an Apple TV version of the app, for example.
There is a move afoot, and it's being supported right now by Google and Microsoft for something they call progressive web apps. That sounds similar. Apple has kind of gone back and forth on maybe supporting it in Safari. What it is the idea that you can develop essentially what is a web page, completely cross-platform HTML5 web page, but that computers, smartphones, tablets, laptops, desktops, have service workers that are running, and the browser supports this. It will download the assets from the web page, and the web page basically turns into a app that runs even offline on the platforms using the service workers. And I think both Microsoft obviously likes this because they have this problem with the web, but the Microsoft Store and so forth.
We live in a strange world where Microsoft has this problem. Yeah.
Google wants it because, of course, that means Chrome OS and Android both could run these apps. And I would it seems like a very good technology. I'm not an expert on it, and I'd love to talk to developers.
It's Electron apps. Like, people widely hate Electron apps on Mac, like Slack. Slack, I believe, is an Electron app, and there's more and more of those. And as always, when it's easier for the developer, it somehow never manages to be better.
Well, the problem with Electron is you're basically downloading entire Google Chrome as the engine for Sublime or Atom, or I think it's Atom is running an Electron. So you have these very, very heavy apps. I don't think this is as heavy.
I think this is more of a develop once and propagate to everything.
Exactly.
I don't think it has to do with web.
It's kind of web. It's web apps on steroids, though. It's what Apple originally proposed.
Yeah, I think it's going to be still a native app that does all the good things about the native.
And it's HTML.
You know, I don't even think it's going to be. Yeah, but I think that the interesting thing about that is that it also sets the stage for Apple to finally make some of their hardware touchscreen, because they, you know, this interface has to get
involved. Well, I'd love Apple to adopt it, but it sounds like this is a different technology to accomplish the same thing.
I see it as completely different solutions. I think that the solutions you're talking about that Google and Microsoft are looking at, Microsoft isn't looking at that as a replacement for their desktop strategy, but simply as a way to sort of enhance what they've got. Remember, this not just Windows. They really do have that Windows everywhere mentality, that if they've got an app or a service.
Well, they could write one app that runs on an iPad and Windows.
But they also have the firepower to have people who are writing, for better or worse, a real desktop app for their purposes. For Google, it's to their point to make sure that everything can be run within a browser, because that is their business. The third factor there is that you've got the majority, I think, of development talent out there that is learning. There aren't really sort of green thumb developers, if that makes sense. These are people who learn how to write stuff, and here's how to use a framework, and here's how to customize that framework in JavaScript. So it allows you to sort of take this pool of talent that is very, very results oriented, as opposed to let's push the technology forward oriented, and allows them to become a lot more powerful and a lot more useful. Now, as far as Marzipan goes, I had two reactions to it. One of which is that, well, that certainly makes sense, given that the core functionality of so many apps is shared between iOS and macOS. So that's certainly a natural thing. All the stuff that Renee was saying about how developers wish that a lot of elements of the Mac experience could be created as flexibly and as wonderfully as the tools that they use for iOS, that's absolutely a very good point. So a lot of this is really great news. I would also, I got to say that after 2017, I still think that Apple has yet to demonstrate that they have a lot of excitement internally about the Mac's future. They really have to prove by having a demo during WWDC of new features in the macOS that it's not just, hey, look at this iOS-like feature we added to Mail. So in the back of my mind, I have to wonder, is this a way for them to sort of subtly pivot the nature of development from, hey, write an iOS app, and after you've written your wonderful iOS app, it'll be so easy to turn it into a wonderful macOS app as well. And or to make sure that if we imagine that there's already a date circled on a calendar 5 years hence from when they're going to announce they're going to drop macOS for good, imagine a date in 2 or 3 years where they can say, look how hey, all you Mac developers, guess what? You now know how to write a really great iOS app, and we're going to teach you how to turn those skills from this dead end thing that we only use for machine learning and for iOS development platform, and use it to make money off the iOS app store. So again, I'm not saying that this is absolute. This is what's happening. I'm saying that 2017 really underscored for me that Apple has yet to really demonstrate that they are committed to, as something other than a platform for developing iOS apps, as something other than something for running huge CPUs that they can't put into an iOS device. They have yet to demonstrate at this point that they're committed to the Mac as its own platform, as its own destiny, as an important part of computing in general. And until they've played that hand, until they've had that dog and pony show, I think that I have to take this news and wonder what the ramifications would be if they have planned to dump macOS at some point in the future.
Hope that's not the case.
I think that Apple's, I mean, my, you know, from the outside, it seems that Apple views it as if you're doing anything that's not GPU or CPU intensive, you probably should be using an iPad. You know, like, I don't say I agree with that, but I'm saying that I think that, you know, because I feel like I'm just too old. I can't do a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of simple things that I just like to use my laptop for, yeah. And my kids don't know what to do with the keyboard. I mean, like, they use it occasionally, but they're much more facile with the iPad than I am.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the future holds.
It's interesting. And remember that this is completely in flux at this point. This is just an idea that they're certainly moving forward,
yeah,
but they haven't.
What it feels like, yeah.
I don't think that even internally Apple knows exactly what they're doing with this. And by the time we see this at WWDC this year or even next year, that's when we'll see exactly what they intend for this. For now, I do think that it's a way of making sure that whatever you learn either on the Mac, as a developer for either the Mac or the iOS, you'll be able to take that and translate it elsewhere. You don't have to write the same code base several times. And I think that's a good thing. But again, I do have that. That little extra. There's a reason why we keep a spare tire and road flares in the trunk of the car at all times, because we know that mankind is born into trouble just as surely as the sparks fly upward.
Well, and I think a large portion of users do, you know, could, if you know, have either a, you know, could have something that just didn't have a lot more to it that maybe had the form factor of a Mac, but really ran more on iOS. I mean, there's a lot of people that I know that aren't using the computers very hard. I mean, they're checking their email. They're doing a couple other things. They're, you know, there's nothing about what they're doing that would require a Mac, you know, or Mac apps that, you know, that just don't use it that way. And I think that there is a huge draw for Apple to get away from having that issue where, you know, what if you had a completely sandboxed environment? It's safe. It's, tried and true. You know, you have much lower chance of, it's very secure. Like, all of those things are beneficial to the average consumer that just wants to use their computer to check email and surf the web and do a couple little things. And so I think that is a is maybe where there is a version of the Mac that lives out there that becomes more of an iOS thing. And then there's people like us some of us that want to customize it, and we still use the Mac, or we want to use it hard, like what I do, which is, you know, CPU and GPU intensive processes.
I went on this vacation. I didn't take a Mac with me. I only took my iPad.
How'd that go for you?
It was great.
I try that.
Yeah. It's very light, I wasn't doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
There's one thing also to remember in all this is that Apple is a huge iOS and Mac developer, and they will often solve pain points for themselves that end up benefiting other huge iOS and Mac developers. And if it makes Apple's life, like right now, you look at Messages, where two versions later, it still won't show message effects. And having to, like, increasingly we have features that we want on both platforms, and they're just not showing up, primarily not showing up on the Mac. And if it makes it easier to keep the platforms in lockstep where it makes sense, like things like iMessage showing me the bubble effects that I want to see, I'm all for this sort of thing.
Yeah. Do you think, I think we've said this before, that we'll know when this time is coming that the macOS is going away, when you can develop apps on iOS fully?
Yeah, that'll be a big sign. Well,
when Apple gives you an alternative to Xcode on the Mac, then that's when we know that the time is nigh. When Apple releases Xcode for Windows, that's when, okay, time to not buy any more Macs.
Well, that would be truly depressing. Like, if you want to develop an app, write it on Windows. Oof. Yeah.
It's also possible that that there'll be a third thing that comes along. Like, it's the same way Next obliterated the previous Apple thought. There could be something that happens that sort of takes over and is more intelligent and more diverse and understands context and replaces both iOS and macOS for Apple.
You don't need to write software anymore. It'll write itself for you.
Leo, automation is taking over everything. There's going to be just AR versions of us sitting around here in 30 years in the exact same show. It's going to be amazing.
Yes. So, in 30 years. Yes.
Tim Cook doing okay. His
not as well as Angela Aaron's.
Angela made even more money, but they had to promise her a lot of money to leave her CEO job at Burberry. So Angela, what is Angela's payday? They got $24.2 million each. Angela, Luca Maestri, Johnny Cerugi.
She gets commission, right, on everything sold.
But, no. Oh, does she get a commission on everything sold? That would be good. Bruce Sewell, $24 million each. Tim Cook got $9.3 million in incentive pay. This is for 2017.
He is no longer allowed to fly on a public airline.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Cook. I know you love United Airlines.
Well,
I know
Steve
you
Jobs
do.
Didn't, but these operation guys are often like they still drive that 10-year-old Camry. I mean,
I don't blame them.
Force them onto their planes.
$3 million in salary and equity award, which means they gave him $89.2 million in stock. So Tim Cook's total payout $102 million.
He's giving it all away
because he's that kind of guy. Tim Cook's travel costs in 2017 a mere $93,000. Yeah. He's a piker compared to the Trump cabinet. He should really get out there and start spending.
For a lot of the executives.
He's hitchhiking.
For a lot of executives, it comes down to their time. You know, so they don't like to travel a lot because...
I have no problem with Tim Cook flying private jets.
A lot of them won't even if it's private jets, they don't want to fly. We do a lot of, not for Apple, but we do a lot of point-to-points where we take a very high-level CEO or high-level officer and put them somewhere else in the world to be like on a big screen in front of lots of people. And that's becoming more and more popular because
they don't want to go anywhere.
They don't want to go anywhere because that's, it's three days and it's time shifts and it's them, being less than efficient, especially when you're paying someone $10 million a year or $5 million a year, every day costs you... Right. X amount of dollars to have them out, and the cost of their flight is nothing compared to the cost of their effective execution.
Tim's security costs almost $250,000.
So is that it? A quarter of a million dollars?
Yeah, that's not much, is it? That's like three guys.
Nothing.
It's nothing.
Nothing.
Like not I don't even know how. Guys, I don't even how you. Two guys.
I don't even know how you could do an event for
one big guy, one little guy.
I work on events where the security cost is higher than that. I mean, to do that for a whole year, that is.
Now, they call this incremental security cost.
Okay, incremental.
So that's over and above what they normally do.
So that means extra people when he arrives because the Apple security probably has staff that is is showing up.
They have a full-time security.
But yeah, $224,000 is nothing.
They got Apple Popo. They got Apple Jail. They got Apple everything.
Chase cars. I
mean, yeah, they got it all.
Apple helicarriers.
Security guys. security guys that work for these corporations is nothing to mess with.
I'm with the Apple.
They're beautiful aluminum helicarriers.
iPhone had a very good holiday season, the best-selling tech product of 2017, according to USA Today. That includes iPhone 10s and 8s, although it's pretty clear the iPhone 10 outsold the 8, at least in terms of product activations. 30% of U.S. iPhone sales during the first 30 days of availability, iPhone 8 and 8 Plus made 40% of the sales in that period. So it's conflicting data.
They do that on. I believe they do that on purpose so that they can tell their clients to buy, sell based on what they think the media response will be. And so then they can make a fortune.
We did see a story that was quickly debunked that Apple was slowing down production of the iPhone 10 because it wasn't selling well.
Yeah, that's because they want to be able to short before the story got a lot of attention. I am getting so jaded with all of this financial coverage because it just seems so manipulative.
Well, you know what surprised me? I did see one story that said that worldwide, the activations for the Google Pixel 2 XL handily beat out every other phone, which really surprised me, given the...
I thought that they said the same thing about iOS.
I know, it's very
iOS
confusing.
Activations were some kind of...
I think that's in U.S. alone, U.S. Okay. Activations. Right. So... yeah, you got to compare global with U.S. Apple tops device activations during holidays. iPhone 10 handily beating iPhone 8 and 8 Plus. This is, I think, U.S. only. This is from Flurry Analytics. Apple and Samsung, Huawei, Xiaomi, Motorola, LG, Oppo, and Vivo.
And many of those companies will report actual results, soon enough, so we don't have to guess.
Yeah, this is, this is global. Oh, it's so confusing. I don't know.
They're all doing well. They're all making more money than
everybody's doing just fine.
It was a good holiday, except unless you're Sears.
So I'm sorry. Pixel 2 XL did well in the United States. Was number one in the United States. Globally, Apple did best. So that's very strange. But again, it just depends on which analyst you're following and where his stock sits. An Italian company calls itself Steve Jobs, and Apple can't do anything about it.
Love that logo.
Do you like the Steve? Those are, that's the ugliest logo I've ever seen. It's got an apple in it, though. Bitten Steve Jobs jeans.
The most hysterical thing is that they had a harder time defending the logo than Steve Jobs. It was just as simple as, oh, well, they didn't trademark it. It's just a name. Great. That's good. But hey, that right leading leaf on the top of your logo. Let's talk about that.
That is the ugliest logo I have ever seen. Vincenzo and Giacomo Barbato have successfully managed to win a legal battle against Apple, earning the right to call their company Steve Jobs, according to La Repubblica Napoli. Since 2012, the brothers have been noticed. Apple never trademarked Jobs' names, and they were making a clothing accessory company. And they thought, well, wouldn't it be cool? Hey, that'd be great if we call it a Steve Jobs. And of course, Apple immediately said, "No, you can't."
Magnifico.
So they're going to continue to make Steve Jobs' jeans.
It's not, well, the letter J is not edible. Leo, clearly,
I think that they probably lost. I think that their business plan must have been, we will take it, it will go so far, and that at some point Apple obviously will pay us millions to change the name. And now, damn it, now they have to make like bad pants because
what are we going to do? We won. No.
Oh my God. I love that story.
Those are going to be collector's items, kids. Snap those up.
I don't.
I want to build my own Lisa computer. And actually, I want to get Bill Atkinson on to talk about this.
Raspberry Pi.
Oh, he could build you one.
So, can you imagine how freaky it would be to have, I'm sorry,
Lisa running on a Raspberry Pi.
The $10,000 failure Lisa computer running on a $5 Raspberry Pi. That's what I want.
It was designed for the $68,000. I think it probably would run just fine on a Raspberry Pi.
It'd run faster than the original.
Oh, tiny scale. Yeah, exactly.
It'd be snappy.
It should.
So the reason this comes up is because the source code for the Lisa OS will be made available sometime this year. This is according to the Computer History Museum. I don't know where they must have gotten it from Apple, right? I mean, it's protected, sure.
Apple is vetting it right now for can they do this?
They're taking bad words out of the comments.
It's a total tangent, but Don Melton told me before he got the job making Safari at Apple, his job was to help open source Mozilla open source Firefox. The Mozilla engine for Netscape, and his job was to take all the curse words out of the code because they'd use curse words as line breaks. And he got the job because coming after seminary school, he knew the most curse words. So he was a natural fit.
That is true, that a lot of the vetting for this stuff is not the code. It's the comments.
And partner references that you kind of put in there out of frustration.
And also one thing you do have to watch out for is copyright libraries that you don't have licenses for, things like that. So did Atkinson, I can't remember, did he work on the Lisa or no? I'll have to ask him.
QuickTime is part of that, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
God, if that's the case, then I will make a promise to you that sometime this year, when the source code comes out, we will have Bill Atkinson come in, because he wants to come in anyway to talk about the new version of photo card stuff. He's great. We've done some really good triangulations with him. He's a wonderful, sweet guy. And talk us through the source code. Wouldn't that be
awesome?
Yeah.
24-hour special.
Yeah. Director's commentary. There.
Yeah, absolutely.
The director's commentary of the Lisa source code.
He's so great.
Yeah. No. If you play that card, make sure he comes back for HyperCard. That is the one piece of software where even beyond the original Macintosh operating system.
Scratch, yeah.
Yeah. I want to hear the story from start to finish, every line of code, every detail. I mean, I at some point I hope that Apple will decide to make a Mac OS or Mac System 6.02 open, just so you can create a HyperCard machine that is just, I know there are emulators out there, but I just want a HyperCard focused operating system so that we can make a touchscreen based HyperCard runtime so that these $5, $10, $30 computers can just run beautiful HyperCard stacks everywhere. It's what you can do with Python is wonderful. What you can do with all these different frameworks that are touchscreen graphic frameworks for Python is wonderful. But nothing will ever approach the simplicity and the beauty and the creativity of HyperCard and HyperTalk.
That's a great one. I love that idea.
I programmed a whole radio station with HyperCard.
Oh,
was,
yeah.
I mean, it was just like, it was amazing. Like, and it wasn't like one of those things. I just kind of just started piecing stuff together. And before you know it, I've got the whole thing. And I've, you know, got these rotations and all kinds of other stuff.
Bill has, I got a nice email for the holidays from Bill. He's doing great, by the way. His wife passed, as you probably know, last year. He's, but he's doing really well. He sent me a picture of all his license plates. He's driving a Tesla now, but he had a license plate. I'm trying to find it with the word HyperCard on it. He did have a HyperCard. He also had a GraphBits, and I don't know if QuickTime was later. QuickDraw might have been in the Lisa.
I'm trying to figure out when whether it was an extension of the work that was done on the Lisa for the Mac. I know that it's Bill Atkinson start to finish. I don't know whether
Lisa Graph was there.
Well,
that was in the Lisa. I don't know.
That was an app, wasn't it? Was it the graphics pack library?
It was, according to Wikipedia, QuickDraw was grounded in Apple Lisa's Lisa Graph.
Okay.
You know, the code will probably be in, Bill was the principal designer and developer of the graphical user interface of the Lisa. So we got to get him on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Karsten, good. And we'll have him on sooner if he wants to come on sooner. But that's huge. Yeah. That would be really fun just to go through the source code.
Really, but Bill Atkinson is software development. Yeah, he's like Jack. It's like having Jack Kirby or Stan Lee on. It's not just his mind, not just his imagination, but his knowledge of history and the people he was talking with on a daily basis. It's the more time that I would like to. If I were rich, I would just be paying him. Like, guess every minute you spend, Bill, in front of a microphone, I will cut you a check for $5,000.
You don't have to.
Because just get it.
We
all
had
out
him
there.
In to do a 1 hour triangulation. 5 hours later. Later, we were still going.
That's awesome.
He's a wonderful guy, and we had so much fun with him. Go back and look at those triangulations. And he did indicate he wants to come back. So, we will figure that out. I wouldn't mind doing both HyperCard and Lisa.
No, absolutely.
The HyperCard source is not available, is it? No, I don't think so. Yeah.
No, it's great to have him just come and just talk HyperCard.
Talk about it. Well, we've done that. We've done a lot.
Just HyperCard?
That. Yeah.
Or you just talked?
We talked a lot about the HyperCard. Feels like it. I don't know.
All the cards.
All the cards. Are you going to buy this? I might buy this for my iMac Pro.
No. I don't take it anywhere. the reason I have it on my desk is because it doesn't go anywhere.
Carson, did you find this on Amazon? The La Volta carrying case bag for Apple iMac 27-inch handmade genuine leather and wool felt.
How else are you going to take it to Starbucks with you, Leo?
Look at the guys carrying it down the street.
You need that. I mean, I don't understand why people are making
changes. You can't just lord it over only the people who manage to come to your office. You need the appropriation of strangers saying, oh, my God, is that the new iMac?
And yours is space gray, so it'll even better match.
It'll really look good in that case. Yeah. Only $75.99, sold by Smart Pants US. I think Steve Jobs is the Italian distributor. Steve Jobs.
I don't know what to do with that.
Like, you need it.
I don't need it.
Don't you?
There are very few things that we talk about on the show that I don't go, I need that.
And that's one of them.
This is one of the ones that I do not need.
That's my pick of the week, ladies and gentlemen. What's yours, Alex Lindsay?
Mine is.
So he brought it with him.
No, I just have it on an app. Have you used Vivino?
Vivino. Yes, I have. I love Vivino.
It works so well. It made me like an expert.
You can take pictures of
you take pictures of wine bottles. I was like, I don't know if this is really going to work or not. And so I was in the Whole Foods, and
that's
and
not
I
the was, barcode, the actual label.
You just take a picture of the label, like, and I just was kind of amazed that it worked every single time. And then I took a picture of a label. Now I'm walking around, and I don't know whether I should or I shouldn't, whether it's good, you know, whatever, but I still do it. I sit there and I just take pictures of all the labels to make a decision, because I don't know what wine to get. I know what whiskey to get, but I don't know what wine to get. And so I wanted to get some good wine for the house. And so I started taking pictures of these, and it just worked so well. And I got some amazing, amazing wines. that I would not have bought otherwise. I didn't recognize the label.
It's a really nice app.
And it's, it works really well.
As I do with Persomm, P-E-R-S-O-M-M. It's a sommelier's wine recommendation app. Okay. So now that you know what wine you're looking at, you can look at Persomm, and they recommend pairings and so forth. And then when you get a, I know all of these, when you get your own cellar, then you need Corks. That's going to be your database. Corks lets you put all your wines in the database. Oh. And then when you drink, it'll say when it's time to drink it, like, oh, it's getting old. Time to drink it. You know, when you do drink it, you could take it out of your database. So you combine the three of those. You know, you never use. That's it. Take everything else off your iPhone and stay drunk. That's it. That's all you need.
That's good.
I have a whole wine folder. I'll give you.
Yes. Yeah, send me a folder.
The funny thing is I very rarely drink wine, but I'm ready when I decide to. When I grow up, I'm going to be a wine drinker.
What do you drink now?
Vivino. I water. I love water.
Oh, here we go.
And coffee. A lot of coffee.
I drink tea.
Not the soda pop.
I noticed that they now have bulletproof coffee in a little box at Whole Foods.
In a box?
Yeah, like, you know, you could take it to go. That's the coffee with butter in
like
it.
Like a sippy cup?
So good. If I still drank coffee in mass amounts, I would drink it, but I just drink
butter and some other thing in it that makes you
drink tea.
Smart.
PG tips.
PG tips, we got it. Just for you.
You have to be smart enough to get into the box to get the coffee.
Your pick of the week, Mr. Andy Nahatko.
Mine is an oldie, but now a goodie. This is the new version of Firefox that came out a couple months ago, codenamed Firefox Quantum. Firefox has been in the deep, deep background for a couple of years as the one that the web browser got beaten by, not just Chrome, but got beaten by whatever it was that Chrome beat, and has become kind of irrelevant. This one, I downloaded it a couple months ago, and I gave it my usual test for any web browser that's not my daily driver. I simply kept it running alongside Chrome, which is my daily driver browser. And if I find myself tabbing over to Firefox instead of Chrome, that means that it's a really good thing. And I've been using Firefox almost 50-50 with Chrome these days. And because it's just so much faster than anything else I've got available for me on the Mac, they did a really big rewrite of it. It has a lot better security, a lot better privacy. It is very, very modern, but it also has a brand new rendering engine that's not only hugely standards compliant, but it makes really good use of multiple cores in a CPU. So it is so much faster. Having my usual laziness is that I tend to open tabs and not close them. So, but at the end of the day, especially if I'm researching something, I can have 40, 50, 60 tabs. And this is why I have to restart Chrome every once in a while. It's like a week and a half, 2 weeks later, and only then do I realize that I've got so many windows across so many screens in Firefox, and it's just not slowing down at all. So I haven't switched completely to this new Firefox, but I'm really impressed with it. It's gone from something that I hadn't even installed or kept on previous iterations of my Macs to something that might actually displace Chrome sooner or later, unless the new version of Chrome doesn't become just as fast and just as stable as this new Firefox. And in principle, I like the fact that it is a fully open source app, whereas parts of Chrome are open source. Parts of Safari are still open source, but this is a community owned, belongs to everybody sort of thing. And it means that no matter what platform I have, I can definitely make sure that I can get a version of it for that platform, including all the different flavors of Linux that I'm using. So definitely worth checking out. As with everything else, it's completely free. So definitely, I do think that it's been a couple of years since it's been a very good idea to have multiple browsers on your desktop for different uses. For instance, I still have Safari. I have the Tor browser, and they're set to different levels of inconvenience for my own good. Like a Safari, I've got JavaScript completely turned off. It's the most locked down.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Doesn't reveal anything about me. Right.
There
so if there's something where I want to make sure that I've got something the least taxing thing, I don't have to change my settings in Chrome. I simply tab over to – I simply run something in Safari. But it's really – Firefox is – I think has definitely earned a place in the gun belt of the web browsers on your machine. And it might even be a good choice as your weapon of choice, your primary browser. Definitely check it out.
I find
to Mozilla.org for it.
I find Firefox very good for watching Steeler games. Because here's why. is that Game Pass on NFL doesn't work in the United States. You have to wait for until the end of the game until they start letting you watch it, which is super annoying. And so so if you get Vanish IP and VPN to Delhi, India, and make sure that you don't have any cookies in your browser, you can watch Steeler game live.
Nice.
And so it doesn't work in Europe, by the way. Like if you'd say, oh, I want to do a VPN to London, it'll block half the thing.
Oh, it's
a
big man. Bang.
So the Vanish IP is really cool, by the way. But I use Firefox because I don't use it for anything else, and so it's easy for me to just blow away the cookies every time I use it. So it's like it's my Steeler. This season it's been my Steeler thing, and now that I've said this on the show, it'll never work again. But
you know. We got you, Lindsay.
I think it's a clever idea to have, because most of us have two or three browsers, and on Mac you have Safari, Chrome, and often Firefox.
Right.
To have them have different settings, Andy. Yeah. I like that idea.
It's a great idea.
And so if I need a secure one, is it true that Safari is the fastest and lightest weight on Mac OS?
The day when they announce a browser, it is the fastest and lightest weight, and then someone else makes their announcement, and then you make your announcement, and then they make their announcement.
Yeah.
But they're no joke. None of these browsers anymore are jokes. They're all good.
But also remember that you do have to – of course, Firefox will be the fastest browser on your desktop because you've only got three tabs on it. You've got no settings and you've got nothing. You really have to – it's only after like 2 or 3 weeks when I was using it kind of 50% alongside Chrome that I realized that I'm rocking and rolling this as hard as I use any other browser. And it's still faster than anything else that I've been using. So I'm very, very happy with it.
Yeah, I like Safari just because it has the lowest battery impact still, and I'm always on a MacBook.
Right. If you're on portable, that's for sure the way to go. I have a couple of questions for you guys. So I'm setting up the new iMac Pro. I've been doing that throughout the show. It's nice. It feels good. It's fast. It's fluid. Which package manager do you guys like? There are a number of different ways to install kind of Unix-style packages on the Mac. I've been using Homebrew. You guys still think Homebrew is the one?
Yeah. I've never found a need to try anything else. So I've looked at a couple others, but I've never seen a feature that I understood. I've never been able to answer the question, what will another package manager do that Homebrew will not do for me? So
Homebrew.
So that's your recommendation, because I have to install Emacs and you know, a few of my Unix tools, and I like Homebrew is a nice, easy to use package manager.
Not only that, but if you're doing work with video and transcoding and like ripping DVDs, you can either to make Handbrake work as something other than a way to convert free videos to something else. It's so much command line stuff. It's so much installation, so many settings. Or you take a couple steps to install Homebrew and then install and then use Homebrew to install everything you need. And suddenly Handbrake is just this amazing monster device.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that. And then I'll show you my pick, but I'm curious what you guys think. Now, Andy, you've talked in the past about, I think, Scrivener. Writers have tools that they like to use. We've talked a lot about Ulysses. Scrivener in particular is designed so that you can have research notes at the same time as you're writing. And I've been looking for a tool that will let me keep track of things, take notes during meetings, phone calls, but more importantly, during my travels, keep track of all the documents I need and all that. And I went back to a Mac classic, and I'm curious what you guys think about DevonSync. This is not a cheap tool. The most expensive version, Pro Office, is $150, but I mean, it's a power tool. It has a really nice, and I was recommending this on iOS today, by the way, a really nice iOS side app, DevonSync to Go, which gives you access on your iPad and iPhone to all of your DevonSync notes. It's very ugly in the sense it's very, you know, engineering. It looks like, you know, it's hard to describe. It's just, it's not attractive, and yet it's a power tool, and I find it very useful. I'm just curious, what you guys think of that tool particularly, or if you've used it even. It's been around for as long as it's been Macs.
You know, I played with it. I think it's been given a couple of years in old Mac worlds, and so I'd install it, and I play with it, and I think at the time I didn't have enough need for it, so I just kind of moved on. But now I'm going to go look at it, because I definitely need something like this. I just don't know.
Yeah, for like a project, yeah, man. It's not Omni. It works with Omni Group stuff, but mm-hmm. it's not Omni Group stuff. It's hard to describe. Lawyers like it, doctors, journalists, mm-hmm. writers. Andy, you use Scrivener for your writing, or?
I still use Scrivener as a project I'm working on that I can't talk about right now is classic case in point. I just had an idea that is I just wanted to play with because it was interesting enough, and it's not even really a book yet, but it's just a place where every time I have an idea about what this story should be or what this character should be like or what this page should look like, I just jot it down in a note, and there's always some place I can put it. And now that you have like a pile of different ideas in Scrivener, then the organization of them starts to suggest themselves. And once you start to see one piece of information relating to another piece of information, now you idea, ooh, these two characters should definitely meet. Or remember this problem I had with how do we resolve this weird situation in this world I'm creating? How would that affect B? And then suddenly you actually, if we put that there, then suddenly yes. this is how it gets resolved. So yes. it's
complicated.
In a column, when I'm writing a column, I have the entire idea in my head, and I can just sort of I know what the first sentence is. I can just start with that first sentence and get to the end of it. With something like that, you really do just need to put everything on a big table and start to mentally, like in those crime stories, just connect with bits of red thread to see how things connect together before you see the entire picture in front of you. And I've yet to find a single app that does that as well as Scrivener does, not only with just creating notes, but also here's a PDF I downloaded, and here's a picture that I scanned, and here are some web pages that have information for me. It's true that I've been using this app for years and years and years, so maybe it's just that I know exactly how to use this tool, but every time I look at a new tool like the Devon Think, which I haven't seen in years, so maybe I should take another look at it, I tend to see it as something that doesn't do what I use Scrivener for as well as Scrivener does.
Yeah.
So for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, I've purchased in the last couple of weeks just to try them all, like a number of these, right. And I think I'm going to end up with Devon Think. But anyway, it's hard. There's a steep learning curve. It's complicated, yeah. But it does some interesting things. For instance, it stores the data in text and rich text. So even if they went out of business and you lost the app, you wouldn't lose your data.
Right.
Yeah.
It's encrypted. You can use Dropbox, but you can also use your own WebDAV server, so you can keep it private and personal, which is nice. I don't know. Anyway, that's
it. Definitely give us an update, because I'm still trying to figure a lot of that out.
Devon Think, it's from devontechnologies.com, and I know a lot of power users use it. It is definitely going to take some time,
right,
to understand and use properly. But I've been spending the last couple of weeks working with it. And for instance, I had all my travel information in there, but I actually used it to also keep a daily diary as I was traveling. And it's things like that. It applies itself quite well if you mess with it. So
you know you're onto something when you just find yourself naturally turning to this app.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need somebody. You talk to somebody like me who's told you how well they love Scrivener. That doesn't mean anything if you have all three of those apps on your desktop and you keep coming to this one time and time and time again. So whatever works for you, definitely go for it.
Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
So my pick of the week is informed by what we were talking about earlier, and that is the dangers of heat on batteries, on iPhone batteries, any car phone battery. And what a lot of people, at least my friends, were using were the sort of car mounts that you plug them into the vents, and then they would spew hot air onto the iPhone, and they would get the why is my screen going dark? Why is my phone shutting down? Well, because it's getting overly hot. So I started getting asked a lot of recommendations, especially in light of the recent news, and I came upon this one, which I really liked. I think I saw it recommended by a couple of people that I trusted. I bought one. I tried it out. I ended up getting them as Christmas gifts for a lot of friends of mine. And this goes into the CD slot on your car. And if you're like me, you haven't used that thing maybe since you bought it, because I switched to iPhones fairly early on, and I just play stuff off of that now. And whether it's over Bluetooth or over a cable or over, you know, not aux jack anymore, but over off a lightning cable, all of those things, I just no longer need a CD tray. And I found the dash, the ones that sit on top of the dash, it's a little bit too high and a little bit too far away for me to be able to effectively put it in, take it out, do the things I needed to do. And this turned out to be a really great solution. You just stick it in the CD slot. You turn the little knob so that it's nice and well stuck in there. It's got a very good neck on it that you can position almost any way you want. You just stick your iPhone in there. I plug mine in while it's in there. If the charge is low and I want to charge it up, I can plug it in if I want to. I can plug in audio if I want to do that. And then it just works. And it's right in between the heating vents, so it gets very little of the hot air that's coming out of the car, which I want all of anyway, especially in this weather. And I've been using it for about a week now. I know Georgia has been using it in her car for about a week now, and we're both really, really happy with it. So if you're looking for something for your car, something that's safe and effective,
Nice.
I recommend this.
Ladies and gentlemen, the iMac Pro is set up. The show is pretty much done. I'm just going to – let's see. Yes, we've got the Apple logo. That's all that really counts. That means it's real now.
And it's in six colors like all good logos.
All good Apple logos. This was a red letter day for me. Got my new Mac. Now watch the Mac Pro come out tomorrow. That's why I bought it.
Thank you for doing that, Leo.
Yep, my pleasure.
We owe you a debt of gratitude.
Yep. Renee Ritchie, always a pleasure. Thank you. Are you moving this week?
I am moving the week between I move out on the 11th. I move back in on the 19th. And in between those, I'll do the best I can to figure out what I'm doing.
Okay. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
Good luck. iMore.com. If Apple doesn't do anything dumb in the next few days, Renee will get a little break.
And if you really want to hear more about this, I managed to grab John Poole from Geekbench and Ben Beharin from Creative Strategies and Jerry Hildenbrand from Android Central, who's also an electrical engineer. And I made them all talk about batteries, and I learned a ton of it.
So good. Good. That's Vector?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I love Vector. Learn a lot from Vector. That's a great podcast. iMore.com. Is it iMore.com/Vector? Would that work?
Yes, sir. Yeah, or Vector.show if you just want the podcast.
Ooh, I like it. Vector.show. Mm-hmm. You'll find Alex Lindsay at the Pixel Core. Anything hot going on these days?
Right after the last show that we did on the 19th, we did a new Final Cut virtual user group where we went through, we had the experts, I mean really the Final Cut experts, talk about the new version and the new stuff that's come out. And so it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
You just go to the Pixel Core YouTube channel. And it is some guys that know much more than me about Final Cut. talking about what the new features were. So if you really want a deep dive, there's a solid hour and a half of us talking about the new features and answering questions and so on and so forth.
And do follow Alex on the Twitter, because that's a good way to keep track of what he's
doing. I usually tell you what I'm doing, At
AlexLindsay.
And I'm still using that thing called Instagram that I think is going to be huge.
Someday. Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah,
we'll see. You know, they should come up with an iOS client, because texting, MMSing your pictures, it's okay. But you know, once they come up with like an Android app or an iOS app.
That's exactly. Going to be awesome. That's Andy Iannacco. He's at the Chicago Sun-Times. He's also online at CWOB.com in his brand new studio. Very nice. I like the molding.
Oh, it's beautiful here. I don't even have like shelves up. I don't have my books on the wall, but it's like, again, just the idea of, do I make a sandwich or do I go next door and have someone make a sandwich for me? That's already a win.
Sudo make sandwich, I think, is the command.
Yes.
Yeah. by the way, Andy's lip sync brought to you by Alex Lindsay. Thank you, Alex, for recommending the Sound Devices Mix Pre 3.
He sounds so good.
He sounds good and he looks good.
Yeah, it's like, unfortunately, it's like, okay, it's time for me to buy this, so I'm going to buy it. It's just so good.
Yeah, I bought one too. Yeah, and it's wonderful. I use it at home.
It's like a whole another generation. You know, we've been using Sound Device stuff for years and a decade. And there it is.
Makes Pre-3. Renee's got one. We all have them.
And let's not plug into anything.
I'm using the Pre-2 still. I have to upgrade my.
He has mic. Both.
He likes it so much he bought one just for display purposes.
But well, I finally got the two when Alex told me to get the three. So now I'm caught generationally.
Yeah, it's I think it's probably the third or fourth generation, and every time they upgrade it, it's just these huge jumps of stuff, and it usually becomes less expensive. So it's good. Nice. It's the right direction.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly Tuesday mornings around 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. If you want to watch live, please do. twit.tv/live, or you can watch on demand because we make audio and video of all of our shows available at our website, twit.tv, and wherever you get your podcasts. Please do subscribe. If you'd like to join us in studio, we'd love that, but you got to email us so we'll let you in. Tickets@twit.tv. Tickets@twit.tv. Thank you, everybody. Happy New Year. Happy 2018.
Happy New Year.
We got a
Happy
great
New
year ahead. We're going to have a lot Happy of fun. New year. And we hope awesome. You'll join us each and every week. Now, though, it's time to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.